Historic City Hall. We could not be more ecstatic as a council member that was here almost 10 years ago and had our meetings here. What a nice improvement. We're very, very excited and very pleased. We are going to call our meeting to order, and first we have had a closed session item, and I'll see if we have anything to report by our city attorney.
There's no report.
No report. Very good. We'll move on to our regular session that I'll call to order. And I never use the gavel, but on this historic occasion, there it is. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance by Mayor Pro Tem Sturtevant.
Please join me in the pledge of our flag.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Here.
Councilmember Moreno?
Here.
Councilmember Kelly?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturtevant?
Here.
Mayor O'Malley?
Here.
All present.
Very good. Next, we have our presentations. Whoops. Before we get to our presentations, we will have an approval of the agenda. And I'm going to suggest that we change the order. And we will go with the Patriotism Week number one, and then do our presentation to Channel Coast Corporation, followed by the Pfeiffer Partners presentation.
I'll move approval with that change in order.
Thank you. We have a motion by Councilwoman Moreno, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Sturtevant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturtevant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. And do I see the members from the Elks here this evening? Yes, very good. I'm going to turn it over to Councilman Kelly, and who's going to read this proclamation. If you'd like to move towards the mic, we'll introduce you in a moment. Councilman Kelly.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. Whereas the City Council of the City of Atascadero is proud to uphold and promote the history and heritage of our community, as well as the inherent rights and liberties of our citizens, and whereas the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks, through its constitution, is patriotic order, and whereas the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce is the largest, oldest, and most prominent voice of business in the Atascadero area, and whereas the City of Atascadero, the Order of Elks, and the Chamber of Commerce promote the ideals that the citizens of this nation live in freedom, won through the great sacrifices and many tribulations which have provided the foundation for a free, prosperous, and independent life, and whereas we realize that each generation must work to maintain this freedom, otherwise, through carelessness or indifference, the rights and liberties enjoyed may vanish, and whereas it is fitting and proper to recognize this freedom and to honor the nation which provides it. Now, therefore, be it resolved that we, the City Council of the City of Atascadero, do hereby proclaim September the 9th through the 15th, the year 2013, as National Patriotism Week in the City of Atascadero. And during this event, urge all citizens to proudly display the American flag on September the 11th, and join with the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks and the Chamber of Commerce in expressing gratitude for the privilege of Americanism, citizenship, and appropriate celebrations and observances. And Gail, being the exalted ruler of the Atascadero Elks Club number 2733, of which Mayor O'Malley and I are members, we want to congratulate you and the fellow Elks for the great job you do in our community for the citizens.
Thank you. And if you'd like to say some words, we would welcome.
Thank you, that. Mayor O'Malley and the council people. I'm very happy to be here. The Elks contribute a great deal of work towards this. Tomorrow, I will be going, along with some other Elks, to all the businesses in Atascadero with a certificate of appreciation for them having their flag fly. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you'd come forward, we'll present you with this proclamation. We'll join you in front.
We'll come to you.
We're not skinny enough to get you there. Very good. Our next presentation is to the Channel Coast Corporation, one of the many folks that have done so much here in this building. We are very pleased. I've asked Councilwoman Fonzie to make this presentation.
Thank you. I'd like to read this this resolution. Whereas the City of Atascadero's historic City Hall building was severely damaged in the San Simeon earthquake in 2003, and whereas the construction activities on the massive rehabilitation and restoration project began in 2010, whereas Channel Coast Corporation was selected by Diani Construction as a subcontractor to complete the painting and the detailing and other elements of the historic City Hall project, and whereas during the course of their involvement with the painting and detailing of the City of Atascadero Historic City Hall project, Channel Coast Corporation recognized a need for additional painting work on the lower rotunda, dome, medallion, and chandelier. And whereas Channel Coast Corporation generously donated $12,500 to the City of Atascadero toward the costs required to complete the medallion and chandelier painting and detailing, and whereas Channel Coast Corporation professionally painted and detailed the entire historic City Hall, including the rotunda, dome, medallion, and chandelier, thereby adding beauty and character to the project, which I know we will all say they did. Channel Coast Corporation professionally completed the refurbishment of the wood window frames for the project and also provided the hazardous material abatement and disposal for the project. And throughout the entire course of the project, Channel Coast Corporation has demonstrated their professionalism, thoroughness, and dedication to perfection. And whereas the City of Atascadero has determined that the dedication and contributions to the City Hall project and to the City of Atascadero demonstrated by Channel Coast Corporation must be recognized, now therefore be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Atascadero does hereby recognize and commend Channel Coast Corporation for their extraordinary efforts and contributions to the City of Atascadero Historic City Hall Rehabilitation and Restoration Project. Thank you.
We would invite you to come up and say a word or two if you'd like.
I commend you on your hard work of the city and Rochelle and all you folks and Bernard's and Pfeiffer Partners and everybody involved work together to make a beautiful building for you folks. Hopefully you enjoy it.
So you're the man responsible for that lower rotunda just popping with that beauty down there.
Along with Pfeiffer picking 7,000 colors.
Yeah, there are quite a few color schemes there. But very nice. We greatly appreciate that. I think we would like to join you for a picture on this historic night.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
you. I really appreciate your work.
We do.
Well, thank you again. Next, we have a presentation to us, I understand, from Pfeiffer Partners. Welcome, Stephanie. And we are very appreciative for your work and look forward to what you have to share with us this evening.
Well, Rochelle, good evening. It's good to see you all again. It's nice to be back here instead of over there. And Rochelle kind of took me by surprise when she said, all right, you're coming up for photography. Can you do a presentation? And I asked, about what? And she said, about anything you want. So that being said, we are going to show you some things, hopefully, that you didn't know about the building, that you haven't seen before, just as a kind of thank you very much and farewell type presentation. We're also testing the AV system in some ways. So if we have a few hiccups, bear with us, because we've got embedded videos and other various things that we're going to try out. I'm okay being a guinea pig. So with that, so this building should look extremely familiar to you. This is what you started out with back in 1918-ish. We don't have a date on the photograph. And of course, you remember this scene from 2011, the circus tent, as we called it, where we had to, as you can see, we're still messing with the sound, where we had to shroud the building, essentially, to do the work that was done. And then, of course, there's now. So 2013, welcome back, everyone. The building is almost done. It's getting there. We're still designing new podiums for you for this space and various other things, window coverings, whatnot, but the finishing touches are still most definitely in progress. So we thought we'd give you a few random factoids today about things you might not know about the building. So total number of original drawing sheets, we never found them, so we have no idea. So once again, the call is still out to the general public. If anyone has any idea where any photos or images or the actual drawings might be, we ask you to come forward, donate them to the city, give them to the Historical Society, anything. It would still be fascinating to find out. Now, typically, just so you all know, on a building of this age, there were usually only about 10 to 14 original drawings. That was typical for something of this era. Now, the total sheets we did find was 1/3 of one sheet, and that's what you're looking at on the screen. That was buried in the County of San Luis Obispo's files about a library remodel, and that was it. But we learned a fair amount just off of this 1/3 of one sheet that had been Xeroxed and shoved into a file. The interesting element that you might note is that the stair that is on the southeast side of the building is not shown in these drawings. That stair was added when it became the Moran School for Boys. So where the stair is was offices. So that was our first clue as to why are those stairs so weird? They were added. They were never meant to be there. Now, another interesting fact, the total number of drawings created for this project, 687. So our three sets of drawings that were put forth for bid contain 687 sheets, and then over the course of construction, we probably created another 50 to 70. So that's what it took today compared to the 10 to 14, most likely, original drawings that they had back in 1914 for this. This is just a reminder of what we started with. I think a lot of people have forgotten what the building looked like compared to what they have moved back into. So we had a bundle of Christmas lights up on the roof because as Christmas lights went out, they just left them up on the roof. So there was a lot. We had an extensive amount of missing brick. Everything was cracked. The image in the lower right-hand corner is this room. And if you remember, all of these walls were peeling off of the building. So that's the crack you see, is where the building is just ripping itself apart. And then, of course, there was all the broken terracotta, plaster, you name it, it broke. This is what the exterior of the building looked like. All of that brick shed itself from the building. The white material was put up for temporary waterproofing, but we still had a huge amount of pigeons that got into the space. I don't know if anyone got up to see the building during the time that prior to construction, this floor was covered with pigeon guano. Yum. That's a happy thought of where you are. This is what we started with in terms of the brick. This is where it all landed after the earthquake. Now, given that this is what we started with, we had to get this back onto the building. This was a Herculean effort, and we'll hear names tonight, but tremendous kudos to our masonry contractors. So Chuck Boydston Masons and their amazing crew, along with Preservation Arts, they took on this challenge. And if we can roll the video on this, this is what they had to do. Luke, that's you. Or maybe not. The pressure.
Starship Enterprise had a tough time on their first voyage.
That's why we said we were okay being the test case on this, but we didn't want anyone else to be the test case, so we're good being guinea pigs. No luck, Luke?
All right.
So they literally went in with jackhammers and scraped off every single piece of mortar that you saw that was sitting on all of that masonry. That's how we got it back on the building. So that is manual labor. Sat up on this roof, jackhammered off every single piece of mortar. We had to start with clean bricks. So that's why we sing their praises and say they're some of the most amazing, dedicated masons that we've ever worked with. Bear with us, I swear there's more. I'm making Luke sweat, by the way.
Well, this is when they're working at night, I'm sure.
Yes, this was during the blackout. It starts singing a song, but I really don't think anyone wants that.
Well, I'm sure you can ad-lib.
Mic switch.
Perfect.
All right, looks like we're rebooting. And I don't think you want to see me dance either, so I'll spare you that. Architecture, yes. Dancing, no.
Well, you've done such a phenomenal job. I'm hoping we have a little time for some questions and answers a little bit later, too. And if members of the audience can think up a question or two, I think we could have the time to entertain that, so have folks a chance to think about something in between. Are you ready to continue on here?
Yes, we're set. So at the next video pause, we'll take questions. So more random trivia. Basically, the dotted red line that you see is what we stripped the building down to. So at that level, we removed the entire roof, we removed all the masonry. It was stripped completely, and you'll see that in just a moment. Random factoid, people have been asking on the roof tiles and on the masonry how much is original and how much did we reuse. So there's only about 15% new roof tiles. Everything else was salvaged and then reinstalled on the building. For the masonry on the upper rotunda, it's about 80% new bricks up high and 20% existing. The reason that the number is so high for the high is that we reuse the existing masonry as much as possible down lower on the building where people were closer to it. So you didn't have any oddities with some of the patching that we had to do because up here it was more of a rebuild rather than the, as I said, random patching that we had to do because of the cracks down low. Now, as Dan and everyone else will mention to you, we were very particular about the colors of the masonry on this building. Once again, the random factoid, there is actually 11 colors of masonry on this building. When we got through into the firing process, we had to abandon the lightest color and the darkest color, so we ended up with 9 different colors, and they had to match that perfectly. We made them do it 8 times. before we got it right. And Gianni was about ready to kill us, but perfection is critical when it comes to a building like this, and it had to be right. So 8 times they had to go back and refire the brick for us. Another random piece of information, as you might remember, down in the photo shown on 2004, there used to be concrete masonry units up at the parapet of this building, not the balusters. The balusters were removed at some point in time. Given that we had no drawings, we recreated from photographs, and you now have 474 new terracotta balusters that are installed at the top of the building, thanks to the California Heritage Endowment Grant. So that's one of the added bonuses that was put back on the building as a give back to the community and the city of Atascadero. Everyone asks, structurally, what did we do to the building? Well, we added 248 micropiles underneath this building. Total length is about 16,000 feet, which is 3 miles of micropiles that take you down to bedrock. This building is now sitting on bedrock instead of floating on soil, which is basically what it did before, why there was so much damage. Something floats, it just moves with the earth. Now it's sitting down at bedrock. You got a nice stable building. Now we're going to attempt the video again, so we'll see how fast it takes, and then we'll take any questions if people have them. So Luke, could you run the video if possible? I'll take questions in the meantime.
Questions from the audience. We've got the expert here.
So this is just a taste, in all honesty. This is outside the building. We did have to install them around the perimeter. Now, those guys did that 248 times. And the sections that you saw sitting out in front of them, they put that in piece by piece as they drilled down. So once again, extremely labor intensive. I don't know if you noticed the gentleman who was walking back and forth. He was essentially shin deep in mud. And that's because water came pouring out of the ground, and we needed water to drill. So it was messy, and if you can imagine that happening in the basement of this building, in a low overhead scenario, those guys, once again, they were heroes. They did a phenomenal job, extremely messy, and extremely labor-intensive.
How deep into bedrock did they drill?
The longest pile is 72 feet, so that's how far down we had to go to get into bedrock, and I'm going to readjust to avoid a little bit of the sunlight here. Yes, shades are on order. There we go. So the 72 feet was the longest we had to go, and basically it doesn't go tremendously far into bedrock. It sits on it, and the reason there is, once again, we want it to move with the earth, and if you only have a portion of it embedded in bedrock, it would actually potentially split. So you get it down to the bottom, and then the whole thing, because of the weight of the building, which we'll get to in this slide, make sure it sits on bedrock, which is critical. So in coming up from all those micropiles, we had 1.2 million pounds of shotcrete installed in this building and 80,000 pounds of rebar. So basically, if someone asks, we built a building inside of a building. There's 10 inches of shotcrete almost all the way around the interior walls, and then all of that rebar that you see in that photograph is supporting it. That then connects down to those micropiles, so you have a brand new structure that's sitting within this building. As Mayor O'Malley mentioned during the ribbon cutting, he said, if there's another earthquake, he's running into this building. Yes, do that. This building is not going anywhere. It probably is the safest building around. So keep that in mind. Hopefully there's not a next one, but just in case, run in, don't run out. So a lot of people were asking, as this was all going on, what is going on under that circus tent? You could see it from the freeway. You could see it from everywhere in town. You could see it from the hilltop. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? Well, this is what we were finding. So this is one of the corners of the building, and that gap that you see between the pieces of masonry, you can literally... So you see the gentleman in the right-hand side, and you can see all the way through the building. Those are trees that you see on the outside. And we had taken this video for Rochelle because she wasn't able to climb up one day. So Luke, let's try this again, but this is a panorama. Standing, we had installed scaffolding in here. There was a dance floor at the level of essentially the decorative plaster. And this is just panning around.
Thank you.
So as I mentioned, we completely took the building apart. What you were seeing there was the white shrink wrap on the outside of the building. Now, this is the work as it progressed. You can see all the damage to the columns and everything that you can see in this room. You can see new steel that was being installed. The gray that you see on the walls is the portion of rebuild. So that's all the new mortar as it's drying. So that's how piecemeal this had to be. We had to find the masonry that was still safe, essentially, take off those that were still wobbling. There's a few great stories about accidentally putting feet on the top of walls and the whole wall shifted out. That's what we had to deal with as we went through this, because once again, we just didn't know until we took the building apart. This should look oddly familiar to you. So it's just a point of comparison of what we started with, and then we asked simply take a look around, and this is obviously the room that you are in today. Welcome back. So as we were going through this, our biggest source of information was absolutely the Historical Society. So once again, thank you, thank you, thank you to the Historical Society and everything that they did for us. We would have been lost without these types of photographs to help guide us about what we should do on the inside of the building. So once again, it's just a comparison of 1918, what we started with, and then there's Warren, very happy in his new office because it's so fantastic. And then simple things. So adding new side lights on the sides of doors, one of the complaints we had gotten was there's not enough light in the central ring corridors you go through. You don't know where you're going. You always get lost. These are some of the small things that we heard about that we said, all right, let's try to address this, that the city elected to do as basically an added element that FEMA did not pay for, that the city paid for on their own. Same with the enhanced lighting that you see in the photograph, and then even the red walk-off mat in that office. If you've noticed yet going through the building, the red walk-off mats and the carpet are only on the north and south. So once again, it's to help you identify north from south versus east and west. What happened here, in the upper left, you see the overlooks. They had been filled in when we came in to start working on the building. There was a magical day when suddenly that infill disappeared. The contractors finally took it out. And then, of course, there is the resultant now where you can see down into the rotunda. Once again, a way to help with wayfinding and connecting people within the building so it's not this solid mass of rat's maze that you don't know what's going on. Again, a before and after. We didn't think that people would really remember what the front doors to this building used to look like. What we did was look at photographs and come up with some historic recreations that brought you back to what it should be. Then there was hazardous materials removal. That was fun. So Channel Coast and everyone else who participated in this, I had asked Bernards if they knew the total weight of hazardous material that we took out of this building, and I didn't get an answer. Dan, do you know? Joe, do you know? So there was a lot that had to come out that was considered hazardous material, and then of course you know the finished version as you walk around, right? There was a lot of pigeon guano in here too. So as I mentioned, this floor was covered, the entire interstitial space of the upper rotunda was covered. Guano is considered a hazardous material. This room.
Goodness.
Oh. So no more pigeons. Let's not go there. And then, of course, there's 2004 compared with 2013, for which we thank Channel Coast and Rob and everyone else for the phenomenal job that they did in this room. By the way, there's only 7 paint colors. It's not 7,000. We did do a lot of mock-ups in this room, and we did change just about every color, but 7 colors, if anyone wants to know. And then once again, it's the small things. It's what it looks like on the outside with the doors, simple changes from the aluminum to the appropriate historic looking doors. So they were very pleased with their building in 1919. And obviously to all of you, welcome back. We hope you are just as pleased with it. Now a quick, I'm gonna put this back down because I think the sun has disappeared from my angle. We just wanted to say thank you to all of you. This has really been tremendous. We've been in the city for almost 10 years now and everyone has treated us like family. So we appreciate every minute of that. We are going to miss all of you tremendously, to Rochelle and Warren and Russ and those who aren't here anymore, and of course council. And as a thank you to you, you might notice that we've got people stands and for even reaching into the city coffers to do the right thing on the building and come up with some of these amazing things like the enhanced lighting. So with that, I'm going to ask Dan to say a few words, and then I'm done, I promise.
This is my last week up here in Atascadero, and it's a sad moment, but it's happy too, because we were able to come in here and celebrate. I've been here about 3.5 years, become a citizen, and I'll be leaving, but I will always be a citizen in my heart, and I thank you guys. I really want to thank the council, Rochelle, and Warren, and Russ, everyone on staff that we've worked with. It's just been, all throughout the process, it's just been a great project. We've had a wonderful team to work with, from the architectural staff. We're fortunate to get contractors that worked well together. It was, as you can tell, this was not an easy project. There's nothing on this job that was simple. Everything was very complex. There's a lot of danger involved in rebuilding this upper rotunda. This structure, all the structure underneath the supporting pieces, structure pieces above, were removed and sat up on shores for about, what, 6 months? 6 months, so it was just sitting there, so we just, please, let's don't have an event, because don't know what's going to happen. It was braced off, but we were exposed for a time. But everything just went wonderful, and I want to thank you. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Well, we're very proud of this building, and we have a lot of community pride in our community, I think, with our centennial year, and this is really a culmination for all of us. So we are thankful that you love this building as much as we have, and it certainly has shown in what you've done. So we do consider you welcome anytime, and definitely fellow Atascaderoans. So thank you again. Yes, I think any council member would like to make a comment. This would be appropriate.
Thank you, of course, and really appreciate this presentation. And will some of this, like the factoids and things like that, be available down in the first floor where we have sort of looking at the, because I think that would just be fun for people visiting to know all of that. Okay.
Thank you very much. Councilwoman Fonzie.
I always look up at this building and have since I was a child and seen these sayings on the sides of the buildings that we should keep our faces to the sunshine so we don't see the shadows. And we went through a period of shadow when this building had the earthquake. We're out of that. We're back in the sunshine, and we thank you sincerely.
I'd like to thank everybody that worked on this building. It was just an incredible project. And I think when we had the ribbon cutting, what was really impressive was looking at all the citizens and the visitors that walked into the lower rotunda and just looked up and their jaw would drop. And people asked me about this building, and I say, I don't know what else they could have done to make it any better. And it's just a fabulous building. I think one of the comments I've heard years and years ago came from Jim Wilkins. Could you imagine back in the 1920s coming over to Cuesta Grade on a horse and buggy, or if you're lucky, a Model T, and seeing this fantastic building sitting out basically in the middle of nowhere because we didn't have the trees there. And I think this is still a fantastic building that's sitting here on the Central Coast, and I'll say it's real close right behind Hearst Castle with the job that you guys have done to restore this, and I'd just like to thank you.
Well, it's unanimous. Thank you. We're going to move on to our consent calendar, and it has items that should be fairly routine. Any member of the public wishing to pull an item from consent calendar? Seeing none, any member of council comments or item to be pulled?
Yes, I need to acknowledge I need to excuse myself from item 2, which is the Oak Haven plat map acceptance, because I have a conflict of interest. The company I work for is representing the developer, and I work for Century 21 Hometown, who will be listing that property.
Very good. So we will assume your vote on this item will not be including number 2. Anyone willing to make a motion?
Make a motion. We accept the consent calendar as it is. Yes.
Second.
I should have been clear if there's any public comment on this. No one wanted to pull an item, so we'll assume there's no public comment. But if there is, this would be the opportunity. With that, I'll go ahead with the motion on the floor.
Ms. City Clerk, did you have a question?
No, I was just going to do the roll when you're ready.
Oh, very good. Go ahead with roll call.
Councilmember Fontenot.
For the first meeting here in the historic City Hall for the last 10 years or so, we have some cake and there's some water in the background, and we invite anybody to have cake.
So very good. So in a Tascadero, you can have your cake and you can eat it too. So we'll take a brief 10-minute break.
Off, and public work crews spent most of Friday cleaning up the fish and implementing additional aeration equipment. Basically, the fish die-off for the event was caused by an unexpected algae bloom in combination with low water levels, rising water temperatures, and a sudden drop in dissolved oxygen. This is an event that's happened in the past. It's a natural process that happens when you get low water levels, warm temperatures. This algae blooms and dies off quickly, causing oxygen problems. Staff has been monitoring oxygen levels weekly throughout the summer, and recent meetings had been very good for this year, so we've been fairly lucky up until now. Friday morning, we arrived at the lake, seeing many fish floating on the surface. Staff deployed immediately several portable pumps trying to get more oxygen into the water. Friday night, Saturday morning, another large die-off occurred, and staff responded again with the help of volunteers and a few residents around the lake, cleaned up the dead fish, continued the pumping. Since Saturday, it appears the lake has stabilized and there have been no more fish surfacing. So we're back in a stable period. Some water facts. The lake, when full, holds approximately 210 acre-feet of water, or 68 million gallons of water, and covers 30 acres. The maximum depth is 13 feet, but right now it's currently 4.5 feet at the deepest point. And the southern half of the lake right now is no more than 1.5 to 2 feet deep. The lake is approximately 30% full. Compare this to Nacimiento, which is at 40% capacity, and Santa Margarita's at 51. So this is not something that's unique to Atascadero. We're just a lot smaller lake, so it's magnified here. We get a lot of questions, especially on Facebook, why don't we just fill the lake? 1,000 gallons per minute for 24 hours could raise water levels about 3 inches per day with the current lake surface. Obviously, as the lake started to grow, that increase daily would decrease. Keep in mind that we lose about 135,000 gallons of water per day due to evaporation. So basically, the cost to fill the lake would be a minimum of $500,000 and would take up to 48 days to fill it. So this is not something that is truly an option. The water is to be used for residents and for the purposes here in Atascadero, rather than putting it into the lake on a daily basis. So that's a lake update. El Camino Real update. The project was a resurfacing project, and it resurfaced El Camino Real from Vons to Chalk Mountain Liquor. If you've driven down El Camino Real, it looks beautiful. Got rid of a lot of those cracks and former crack sealing projects and potholes and all sorts of stuff. Looks fantastic. We had some questions on why didn't we do that at night. This is a type of project that actually takes a lot shorter time to do it during the day. At night, it takes a drying. It's a cold-in-place recycling where they grind up the asphalt and lay it back down. During the day, it takes about 2 hours to dry. At night, we were looking at 6 to 8 hours to dry. That's why it was done during the day. Microsurfacing was completed on schedule and under budget. The striping of the road had to wait 2 weeks, though, so everybody's saying, when's the striping coming? It had to wait 2 weeks to ensure that the surface was completely cured and the paint would not soak into the surface. The contractor is in town this week to restripe, and the project should be complete by Friday. New businesses in town. Avanti Italian Restaurant opened yesterday in the building that formerly was Village Cafe, so welcome to Avanti. And Style House Furniture is also now open. They're in the building that formerly was Deku. I've heard good things about both businesses here in town. And my last update is a Grape Encounters. Dave Wilston, host of Grape Encounter, recently chose Atascadero as a home base for his radio show. And the city is participating in a co-op sponsorship effort in collaboration with Visit San Luis Obispo County and other partners to promote Atascadero on the Central Coast. David is here tonight to share how those efforts are currently being implemented. So if I could have David go up, I believe he has a short presentation for us.
Welcome.
Coming up here for a long time, and in the process have had the privilege of seeing what goes on here on the Central Coast in general and the evolution that we've gone through. 4 years ago, quite by accident, after many years of being involved in broadcasting in one form or another, I shared an idea about putting together a wine show. It sounds very pretentious, I know. But my idea was, as you can see up there, the subhead, there's something funny about this wine. I always used to make fun of pretentious people, you know, because I think wine should be fun. And so there's a big difference between the Central Coast and that, what's that other wine region up a little further up the road that I've reported so many stories on?
The place that does auto parts.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. We had an idea that you could talk about wine in an unpretentious way and have fun with it. You know, 3 years ago, wine became the number one adult beverage in America, and it's a big part of our economy, and it's a big part of the local economy here and getting bigger every day. And so we took the chance of going on the air and sort of poking fun of some of the things that we do with regard to wine, the silly metaphors that we use and the ridiculous language. And a funny thing happened. We aired our first show down in the Santa Maria area, and 3 months later, it was the number one show in the marketplace. It was eventually picked up by KFWB in Los Angeles, a CBS station. We're now heard all the way from the far end of Southern California, Orange County, Inland Empire. We're heard on the number one station in Bakersfield, still obviously in Santa Maria. Very proud to be on the Crush here in San Luis Obispo, which has a wonderful audience. We're heard on KNEW in San Francisco. We're heard in Seattle. We're heard all the way up to the number one station in Anchorage, Alaska, and all the way to the East Coast, though we have some gaps we're trying to fill in. But growing very quickly, and we have a pretty significant online audience. If you go and look for us on the at the iTunes store and you search for wine, you'll see that we come up well before most of the other thousands of shows that are out there. If you Google us, you'll see that there are not just dozens, but you know, maybe 100 pages on Grape Encounters. So we've created a brand that really talks about wine, and not just wine, but the wine lifestyle in the way that I think the public wants to talk about it. And in many of our shows, we don't talk about wine at all. We just talk about the lifestyle. And we've created something that I think is very fun. Well, we decided not too terribly long ago that sure, and I get the opportunity to talk about it because we're doing something now that we wanted to do, but it had to be the right place, and that is this. To give Grape Encounters a home now that it's growing so fast and give people, you know, just like The Tonight Show has, you know, beautiful downtown Burbank, or David Letterman has the Ed Sullivan Theater, and so on. We wanted to have a home that reflected the personality of this show that's growing in popularity at such a rapid pace. And so through some discussions with the city manager's office, with Visit San Luis Obispo, we've supported them for years, things like Savor the Central Coast. And through those discussions, we're able to come up with a plan that I think works for everybody. And we packed our bags and we moved. And by the way, I moved up here from the Palm Desert. And just so you know, I was on the air every day and reported all the time on the Salton Sea. You don't know anything about dead fish, okay? When we kill off fish down there, we do it by the millions every single day. It's fantastic. Although there's a lot of water in that body of water that you could pump up here. You just would kill more fish. Anyhow, so we packed our bags and moved, and we have built a studio here on Traffic Way. You may be familiar with the property, El Paseo Plaza. That's the family property. It's been mostly empty. We've got it all fixed up. We have new tenants moving in. It's all going to be wine country themed, and I expect within the next few months we should have that fairly full. and it should be a great place to hang out with patio umbrellas. I think we'll put patio tables under the umbrellas just so that people have a place to sit. And what we've done that's mostly interesting is that we've built a studio there that can accommodate small studio audiences, and so we can actually have people participate in the whole process and be a part of the broadcast. So I just want to share with you a couple of minutes of Grape Encounters. I have one very exciting thing to share with you also, that after a visit with the editors of Sunset Magazine, they have decided that they want to throw in with Grape Encounters as well. And so now Sarah Schneider, the wine editor for Sunset, will be a regular every week on Grape Encounters Radio. And that's really good for this town, because what I really haven't gotten to yet is the fact that every show we identify this as our hometown. And that's where Grape Encounters is coming to you from. And we do it in a variety of different ways, and we integrate commercials into the show as well. It airs every week on a lot of different stations. And, of course, those recordings also live in the region. And I play favorites to Atascadero because I can. And nobody's really caught me yet, so as long as I can get away with it, I do. There's a little piece you're going to hear with the owner of Hush Harbor, Donnie. I love Hush Harbor. It's an amazing place. But what I think you'll get from this little piece is that what we don't do is go on the air and just talk things up and gratuitously do commercials that really aren't interesting. We find the interesting story in this particular case, a couple that came out of aerospace and decided, after making many trips to Europe and peeking in bakery windows and deciding, I really want to do this instead of build things that, you know, go up into outer space or kill people or whatever. I want to bake instead. You'll hear a little piece of that story. And it's the way that we tell stories on our shows. There's another show also that airs, and we promote Atascadero on this as well. It's called A Quick Bite. It's on a bunch of other stations, I think 20-something stations. And it's a short annotated version of Grape Encounters with a commercial in the middle that oftentimes, well, actually every week promotes the Central Coast and also promotes this area as well. So if I may, if you don't mind, I'd like to be the first broadcast here in this beautiful building. No video.
Grape Encounters Radio, a visit with the editor-in-chief of one of America's favorite lifestyle magazines, surrounded by vino.
Any idea how much wine Sunset readers drink, maybe compared to the rest of the world?
Well, I was really surprised by this statistic. It is almost 12 million glasses a week.
Per person?
And now, transmitting our signal to wine lovers of the world from our Atascadero Wine Cellar Studio in the heart of the Central Coast wine country of San Luis Obispo County, California, we bring you Grape Encounters with David Wilson.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz.
I have with me today Donnie Monroe. He and his wife Penny started Hush Harbor back in 2003, and this really isn't a story about
this is a quick bite
up on the Central Coast. This is a story of a husband and wife who were in a profession that had nothing to do with baking. I mean, you guys were in aerospace. At what point did you say, you know what, I'm tired of aerospace, I want to do the baking thing full time?
It was growing on me. If you want to make a paradigm shift like that, it has to be something that you can see in your own mind and something that you think you can pull off.
Central Coast Wine Country Studio in Atascadero. That is in the county of San Luis Obispo. And it's a really huge wine country. We've got the Paso Robles Wine Country on one side, the San Luis Obispo County Wine Country, Edna Valley on the other side. So we have located our studios in a very Norman Rockwellian town. I'm just kind of disappointed that there won't be like a little rotunda cupcake.
it seems like
a no-brainer just have a cupcake with a dome on the top of it. And you're there.
Connecting winemakers, wine lovers, wine adventures, and all things wine from around the globe. You are listening to Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson, broadcasting from our wine cellar studio in idyllic Atascadero, centrally located in the Central Coast wine country of San Luis Obispo County, California.
Anyway, a little taste of what we're doing on the air, and I appreciate your support of the show. it was a tough move to get everything here and get everything rolling, but you have quite a story to tell, and we have a lot of microphones to tell it with, so we're very privileged to have that opportunity. Since we started, we've added three stations to our mix, and little by little, we add more. And so it's an interesting partnership and marriage that I think will be very good as long as you stay on your side of the bed. That's it. Anyway, any questions from anybody? Nope. Okay, thank you.
I think that deserves a round of applause. Well, I appreciate that city manager's report. You know, often we'll get emails from our folks in the community, might be asking about the lake, might be asking about the roads, and sometimes I just have to be patient and respond, because a lot of folks don't realize that we are working on these problems for some time and have done a lot of research. I think we need to do a better job of communicating that. So we welcome your questions. It gives us a chance to talk a little bit about the engineering of roads and even the engineering of water. I'm very glad we're going to have Mr. Neal here later. I'm very proud of our water company. You're going to hear a little bit why here a little bit later. But we have a good vision, and we work hard at trying to get solutions for these challenges that we all have. And then, of course, on the positive side, just so thankful for... Okay, very good. We'll make that work. That concludes our city manager's report. We're moving on to community forum now, where it's an opportunity for any of you to share anything, thoughts, or questions you have with us on anything that's not on our agenda this evening. So, welcome. A traveling vagabond, it looks like.
Great presentation about wine. Let's hear it for beer, too. I've got B&B here. I've got beers and bulbs. Okay, so a couple of years ago, there were a small group of us that started talking about doing something for the centennial, and we wanted everybody to participate. So first of all, we had to get a theme. So the theme was, how many bulbs does it take to change a city? And we've come up with 28,310, which is the population of Atascadero, according to our signs, some of our signs coming into the city. And so we figured one bulb per person, we could do that. Well, the good news is we're up to about over 10,000, actually 10,000 bulbs at this point. So between now and the end of this year, we're going to really have a campaign to get even more bulbs, daffodil bulbs, planted. So I understand that there's some girls coming back home pretty soon down in the sunken garden. So I'd like to give the mayor two things here. Tom O'Malley and Peggy have put in over 1,000 bulbs, almost 2,000 bulbs, and they're the Carlton bulbs. And guess what? Those were created in 1927, the same year that the Carlton Hotel was developed and the same year that the Portola Inn was developed. So, Tom, we have some bulbs for the girls here, and we have the gold shovel, and this could be a checked out somewhere to see how much value it has before it goes into the ground. But Tom is going to be the king of the Carlton bulbs.
Well, thank you. So I think we're going to have the council have a little work detail. We're going to plant these around by the maidens, I think.
And now the other part of the B&B is beer. So we found out that there's a type of hops, it's called Centennial hops. And so I went to a couple of brewers and found out that they could brew some Centennial beer. And Central Coast Brewing came up with... So there should be...
Let's count them again here, 2, 4, 6, yep. The number is 7.
So there they are, they're all set to go. So thank you very much for all your support for both the bulbs and the beers.
Very good timing. Yeah, we'll let our administrative services. And I'm thank you for ending right at 3 minutes, because if we let you go over, people would think you had to give us a bottle of beer to go over. So thank you for being on time. Welcome, next speaker.
Thank you. My name is Karen Sturdivant. I'm from Atascadero Main Street, and we have two exciting events coming up this weekend. Our art and wine tour is Friday night, and if you'd like to come down to our Main Street, for $10, you can get a wristband and come taste the wonderful wines of our North County coast, and come enjoy the shops of Atascadero's downtown. We have our first folk music festival. Pardon me while I read it because I want to make sure that I get the information correct. Saturday, September 14th from noon to 9 p.m., there's going to be the folk music festival, and it's going to be down in the... Tom, would you help me with the what we would call the location of where the folk music festival is? Between Sunken Gardens and the creek. Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. So there's going to be different folk artists, and we invite you to come on down and enjoy the music. Thank you very much.
Welcome, next speakers.
Good evening. My name is Mitch Paskin.
And I'm Deborah Paskin.
And we're residents of Atascadero. And I really had a whole different presentation written up, but considering the auspicious occasion in this beautiful room and the city of Atascadero coming home, we just decided to defer and just say how wonderful it is to be back up here. And you guys did a great job, and it just feels good, feels right. The people that wanted to tear this building down, I don't know what they were thinking. So congratulations.
Thank you.
And I, too, wanted to say I'm just tickled pink. It's just, it's marvelous. It's gorgeous. It's just beautiful. And I'm hoping that in the future, other buildings they'll use this as a reference point for the architecture. This is really, truly the landmark. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And to this point, I think we've reached 3,000 people with tours. So we're getting out, getting the history out, and building that tour system. And we'd like to reach out to the public. We are looking for docents. We want to do a training program. We've been open on weekends for some of these events that are coming up. We were open last weekend for the alumni, and we had quite a group there. We're open Monday through Thursday, 12 to 2. We have a docent staff down there, and then we're looking to build the weekends after we do all these events that are coming up. So you can get a hold of us through Atascadero Colony Museum at gmail.com is one of the quickest ways to get to us. Our phone number is 466-1074, I think is the correct number. And I will leave some of my cards down in the lower rotunda in the next day or so the public can pick those up. And then we will get on a website with the city to show when we're going to have the tours. So we're still in the process of building it. Like Rochelle said, is we've been hit with this huge wave that we knew it would be there that first day, but it just kept coming for the week. Well, we're into our third week now, and we've had tours every day that you guys have been opened. So that's a huge accomplishment for us. So I'd like to say thanks for the community's patience.
Yes, I think we have some council questions.
One, would you repeat that email again?
Atascadero Colony Museum at gmail.com.
Okay. And then Gmail. Okay. And then if somebody wants to get together a group to do a tour, would they just contact you at either the phone number or the email and let you know I have a group of, 15 people or whatever
right.
It might be, and you can let them
know?
Yes,
the best way now is through that email. It'll be the quickest way. The
okay.
phone over at the museum doesn't get manned all the time. That email
okay.
gets looked at constantly.
Okay.
So that's the quickest way for people at this point.
Thank
and
you,
then
Jim.
It kind of logs it for us, too, that way.
Okay.
So, all right, thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no one else approach, we'll close the community forum. I do want to follow up with another thank you for Jim Wilkins, as president of the Historical Society. I think he has really brought a revitalization to the organization, and they have done a phenomenal job in setting up historic recreations, not only as part of Tent City, but in our displays down below on the first floor, and then the historic pictures around the building. It's truly a living museum, and it's a functional museum. You can visit anytime. I will move on now after community forum. We do not have any public hearings, and we'll move on to the groundwater update by Mr. John Neal.
Yeah, I'll introduce the item, Mayor.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
We'll get to you later, John.
Tonight, we're just the council's going to receive this report, just a receive and file type of report on just the status of the groundwater basin. As we've all heard in the media lately, there's been a lot of activity at the County Board of Supervisors with respect to the declining water levels in the Paso Robles groundwater basin. So we've invited General Manager of the Water Company here tonight, John Neal, to give us a little bit of update on what the water company's been doing, the status of, you know, their system, and some insight into the effects of this declining water levels in the North County. As in your brief staff report, we talked a little bit about the fact that the Atascadero is served out of the what's called the Atascadero sub-basin of the Paso Robles, a larger Paso Robles groundwater basin. And over the many reports that have been done over the last few years has identified that the groundwater conditions in the Atascadero sub-basin are much better than parts of the Paso Robles, overall Paso Robles groundwater formation. Particularly east of Paso Robles, where there's been a huge, you know, growth in vineyards and irrigation production, and I believe the city has a large well in that area. So that's definitely an area that's in a more rapid decline than other parts of the basin. So a lot of activity has been going on over the last few years. The city has participated in this Blue Ribbon Committee. The Atascadero Water Mutual Water Company has been very involved in the Solutions Committee, and John can tell you about that. So we're in a pretty good place, but certainly the effect of the declining levels in the county area, the county Board of Supervisors at a recent meeting passed a urgency ordinance that has some pretty heavy restrictions on subdivisions, buildings, additional wells for irrigation. It's going to cause a lot of a lot of impact to the development community and agriculture, for that matter. So we're in a much better place, you know, with the water company's development of Nacimiento Water, their groundwater wells, mainly out of the Salinas River. We're in pretty good shape, and John can tell us more.
On the slide, it's up on the screen now. You can see this is out of one of the studies. It shows the extents of the Paso Robles groundwater basin. It's about 505,000 acres, or 790 square miles. It extends from Santa Margarita in the south to about San Ardo in the north, Paso Robles in the east to Shannon in the west. In the entire basin, there's only one distinct sub-basin. And throughout this discussion, I'm just going to refer to it as the Atascadero Basin and the Paso Robles Basin. The Atascadero Basin is separated from the main Paso Robles Basin by the Rinconada Fault. And I'm going to use a laser pointer. You can't see it from where you are. But basically, the Rinconada Fault runs east of the Salinas River along Homestead Road, crosses the Salinas River at about Highway 46 West. And that fault actually creates a dam, and it separates the two basins. And it really puts us in a good position with groundwater resources. And as I go through this presentation, you'll see that. Here's a more detailed view of it that shows just the sub-basin itself. Atascadero proper lies on the easterly fringe of the sub-basin. The sub-basin itself extends from about Traffic Way to Homestead Road. So it's a very narrow basin. And again, it extends north to just north of Templeton. Here's a cross-section out of one of the studies going from west to east. Again, you can see the separation caused by the Rinconada Fault. And what happens is the Monterey Shale that underlies the entire basin and basically uplifts there and creates that dam. One point I want to make clear here, there's the Paso Robles Basin and there's the Paso Robles Formation. The formation is the sands and gravels that hold the water. So the Paso Robles Formation makes up the Atascadero Basin and the Paso Robles Basin, but they're separated by the fault. Here's a section looking from south to north. Again, you can see the Rinconada Fault basically creates a dam. The only connectivity between the two of any significance is the alluvium of the Salinas River. And those sands and gravels are about 90 feet thick. And basically, it's a stream. This is a little, I call this a cartoon, I prepared this for county planning staff during the resource capacity study hearings, which is the sands and gravels of the river. And again, it's about 90 feet thick. Then there's it's a clay layer, but it's not continuous. There is connectivity between the alluvium and the Paso Robles formation. And that layer is about 60 feet thick, typically. And then you have the main Paso Robles groundwater, or Paso Robles formation, which we call our deep wells. And that goes down to about 600 feet. The interesting thing about the underflow is if you don't use it, you lose it. It flows to the north, and it'll eventually get to Monterey. The water that's in the basin itself resides there until we actually tap into it. So the water company, part of our operational strategy, is to pump as much of that alluvial water as we can out of that Salinas River underflow. And thanks to E.G. Lewis, we're in a very good position to do that. We have both riparian water rights to that and appropriative water rights to that underflow, which puts us in a really strong position. We can basically use as much of that water as we can take. And in fact, the last 2 years, we primarily used underflow water. We hardly tapped into the Paso Formation water at all. When you look at basins, you look at them as far as perennial yield. How much water can you get out of a basin year after year after year without mining it or without groundwater levels declining? The Paso Robles Basin, it was estimated there's about 98,000 acre feet a year that you can pump from that basin. The Atascadero Basin, the estimated yield is about 16,400 acre feet. It's a much smaller basin. And an acre foot is about 326,000 gallons of water. In our service area, a typical single-family residence uses about 0.4 acre-feet per year. So just to put things into perspective. And that number is actually dropping through conservation, et cetera. Some estimated pumping. Back in 2009, these are the latest overall pumping records that I have. You can see Paso Robles Basin is rapidly approaching its perennial yield. Indications are it may have exceeded that. And the county is currently updating their study to really see how much water is being pumped out of that basin. Primary pumpers in Paso Robles are agriculture, followed by urban pumping, and then rural and small commercial. The only accurate number there is the urban pumping, because those are the only entities that meter their pumping in the Atascadero Basin is municipal. And our reaction to a drought is significantly different to a basin that's being pumped primarily for ag. I think it was in 2008 when we were in a drought, we could encourage our customers to conserve. And we actually reduced consumption by 20% that year. In an agricultural or basin that's pumped primarily for agriculture, their response to a drought is just the opposite. They have to pump more to keep their crops alive. So, again, the Atascadero Basin, we can manage it differently. And the agriculture or the urban pumpers in the Atascadero Basin are primarily Atascadero, Templeton, and about half of Paso Robles water comes from south of the Rinconada Fault, but a lot of that water is from the underflow. It's appropriative. So part of the study that they're doing now is really to evaluate how much of Paso's pumping south of the fault is actually from the subbasin. This is the chart that basically prompted a lot of the action you've seen the last couple of years, the resource capacity study by the county, and then subsequent to that, the urgency ordinance that was adopted back on August 27th. And it shows areas of decline in groundwater basin. The red area that you see in Paso Robles and east of Paso Robles, groundwater levels between 1997 and 2009 declined more than 70 feet. You can see the fault line. Again, it's that black line running from north to south. You can see the difference right there of how that fault separates Atascadero from the main basin. Here's an updated chart of the same thing, 1997 to 2013. You can see Atascadero water levels are actually have actually come up. And they're actually higher than they were back in 2009. And we're seeing that in our well field. Even though we only had 8.5 inches of rain last year, the basin was brimming full. And our water levels are as good as they've ever been this time of year. And that's before the introduction of 2,000 acre feet of nonsedimental water, which we're currently discharging adjacent to the river. A lot of that has to do with reduced demand, and I'll get into that in a minute. And it's just the way we're, again, the urban pumpers are managing that water resource. This is one of the most telling graphs that I'm going to present on those well levels versus what's happening in Atascadero. You can see that rainfall has a huge effect. The basin fills up very fast. And the reason is the area of recharge, which is primarily the Salinas River, is very large in relation to the basin itself. So a lot of the rainfall we get, we're in a fortunate position. It percolates through the alluvium, works its way down through those clay layers, and basically fills up our basin. And it does it very fast. And if you look in the winter, if you see that little thread of water flowing down the river, you know that the basin is brimming full. It can't hold any more water. And that occurred last year, and there's still water flowing in the river just to the north of our main well field, which is almost unheard of. And again, you can see it reacts very rapidly to the rainfall events. There's almost a direct correlation between the rainfall and the water levels. This is a similar graph. I prepare this for our board every month. It shows rainfall in relation to groundwater levels. The red dashed lines are cumulative rainfall for the rain year, which is July 1st through June 30th. And then you can see the reaction of the groundwater levels to that. And again, you have three dry years in a row, what is that, 2006 through 2008. You can see groundwater levels have declined quite a bit. Then you get a wet year, it fills right back up. Just a chart of annual rainfall. We've had a rain gauge at the confluence of the Salinas River and Atascadero Creek for the last 100 years. You can see there is a pattern there. It's generally three dry years, one or two wet years, and it just over and over again. Just looking at this statistically, I'm estimating we have a 60% chance of having a less than average rainfall year. I know. But we do have nice amount of water now. This is the engineering part of me here. It's very difficult for me to look at that last chart and get a feel for really what's happening on a long-term average. What I did is I took average rainfall and I took the difference between actual and average and I accumulated it over time. And what you see here is long-term weather patterns. And you can see between 1945 and 1980, we were in a very dry period. From 1980s, it shows you how we have an ability to react to drought situations. If we see that our water supplies are starting to diminish because of a drought or some other reason, there's a lot of flexibility in what we can do. In the winter, February, March, to serve a population of about 31,000, we produce or pump about 2.5 million gallons a day. Now, that'll go up to about 9, 10 million gallons a day in the summer. That difference between those two is a cushion. If we see that our water resources are diminishing, we can encourage our shareholders and our water customers to reduce their water use. Because we know that 3 million gallons a day, more or less, will meet all the needs of the community for domestic purposes. The difference between these two is basically landscaping. Now, it might be difficult if we're in a really extended drought. We're going to see dead lawns. You'll probably see, like we had 4 or 5 years ago, the posters go up all over town. But it makes a big difference. Those activities, again, they cut water use by about 20%. I use this for more of a long-range planning. This is our water use by year from 1975, projecting out to 2025. The red line on the bottom is demand in acre feet per year. And you can see that it peaked somewhere around 1993, and it's pretty much stayed level from that point forward. What's interesting, that coincides with when the water company became very aggressive with its conservation program. So from a municipal user side, conservation works. So even though there's been a lot of growth in our service area between 1993 and now, we're actually pumping less water now than we were in 1993. You can see the growth trend. I measure things in what are called equivalent dwelling units. I convert a single-family residence is one equivalent dwelling unit. And then larger meter sizes have more equivalent dwelling units associated with them. So it's just a way to equalize the playing field. But you can see the growth has been fairly steady in the service area. It averages about 1.2% a year. But then if you look at the blue line, which is the demand per EDU, you can actually see it's declining. So even though we're growing in the service area, through managing the system, we're able to reduce the consumption per EDU. And we're offsetting that growth. San Luis Obispo and CSA 10, which is in Cayucas, have signed up for about 9,600 acre feet. So there's about 6,100 acre feet of unsubscribed for water in that project that's available to either the initial participants or other entities. And there's some discussions now going on at the county level at the Nacimiento Water Project Commission meetings of basically dividing up that 6,100 acre feet among the initial participants because there's really no cost involved with it. It's interesting, CSA 10 being in Cayucas, you would think, how are they getting water to Cayucas from this project? Well, that's the beauty of this project for the entire region. What they're doing is trading water from Whale Rock Reservoir from San Luis Obispo. So San Luis Obispo is taking 25 acre-feet a year additional in Nacimiento, and they're giving CSA 10 25 acre-feet. So this project has opened up a lot of possibilities of moving water around in a whole different manner. And those are some of the things that are being reviewed by the Blue Ribbon Steering Committee for managing the basin. We'll be looking at the Salinas River as a conduit. How can we utilize that water, get it into the Salinas River to keep groundwater levels higher to offset some of the impacts that they're seeing out in the basin? Tascadero's share of this project was about $36 million. Total construction cost, about $176 million. And so we'll pay that off over 30 years at about $2.6 million a year. Here's a picture. I called the county and I said, I spent $36 million for this. This is our recharge basin. It's not much to look at. Our strategy with the Nacimiento water, again, thankfully, E.G. Lewis deeded a lot of riverfront property to the water company. We're discharging about 5.2 million gallons a day into an acre and a half pond, very similar to the city's wastewater pond. That water percolates down through the sands and gravels, which effectively treats the water to drinking water standards. Basically, all we have to do is chlorinate it. This pond is surrounded by four wells, and so there's a mound of water that's created underneath the pond. The wells create a cone of depression. Picture standing on a trampoline. You know how it sinks in the middle? And that water naturally flows towards those cones of depression. And so that's how we're capturing this water and reusing it. And so we've offset about back on August 27th, they adopted an urgency ordinance. It's valid for 45 days. It goes back to vote by the supervisors in 45 days, and they can extend it for up to 2 years. It covers all properties in the unincorporated areas that overlie the Paso Robles Basin, but excludes those properties that overlie the Atascadero Basin. And there was a lot of discussion about that at the resource capacity study hearing a couple years ago. I think the Board of Supervisors is convinced that there's enough difference between the Atascadero Basin and Paso Robles Basin to really keep us separate from a lot of these activities. It prohibits new or expanded irrigated crop production unless there's a one-to-one offset. So if you want to plant 10 acres of new grapes, you have to basically offset that water use on a one-to-one basis. And the same thing for new development. So if you have a property with a home that uses 1 acre foot a year and you want to build another home, you're going to have that existing home is going to have to reduce its water use by 0.5 acre foot to serve your proposed development. There's a lot of discussion on irrigation ponds during the hearings. The county felt that the existing codes and ordinances would adequately cover them if they basically used a strict application of the code itself and went through a more thorough review process. A couple things in addition to this, we mentioned the Paso Robles Blue Ribbon Steering Committee, which was formed by the county. Water Company's been a very active in that group. They've developed a list of, well, I think it was 96 solutions to try to solve some of the issues. And they did a preliminary screening of those, and they've whittled down to about 20. And they have short-term solutions, and they have mid- and long-range solutions. One of the things that floated to the top is a management district for the basin. There's a group out there called the Paso Robles Agricultural Alliance for Groundwater Solutions, or PRAGS. It's a mouthful. And they are pushing for what's called a California Water District. And that is a district that's formed through the LAFCO process, and it's a weighted vote based on acreage. It's interesting. It's very similar to the water company. If you are a shareholder, you get 5 shares per acre. So you have a weighted vote in the water company. There's concern out there that because there's large property holdings in the basin, that a very type system. Now, the board of directors for that would be the Board of Supervisors. The board of a California water district would be its own entity. And then there's groundwater management districts and a few other ones. The county right now is preparing a white paper for the Blue Ribbon Steering Committee to review to evaluate these different types of management strategies. Other things that we're looking at is how to best utilize that unsubscribed for or Nacimiento water, how to leverage unused storage in the Salinas Reservoir. With the pipeline, we now have the ability to possibly store unused Nacimiento water for dry years, and then we can release it in the summertime when we need it. Those are pretty long-term solutions. The others are getting additional state water into the area. The county currently has about 16,000 acre-feet of unsubscribed for state water available to it. They have no way to convey it from the valley to here. So, again, very long-term solution, very, very costly. So those are some of the things that we're working on. And that would pretty much conclude the presentation. If you have any questions, I'd at least try to answer them.
Thank you. And very interesting report. And I often take the opportunity to brag about our hometown water company in any opportunity I have because, one, there was quite a vision by E.G. Lewis in the thought that went into this and the engineering and the research, but I do think you managed the company well. And I think,
thank you.
We're very pleased. Just one anecdotal story I've heard from one of our local business persons that I'll share without naming names, but someone who operates in a number of cities around, and he claims that, of course, which I think is true, we have the lowest cost water in the county, and he made a comparison of similar businesses he runs all over, and his cost is about $600, relatively speaking, in Atascadero, another nearby city, $6,000, same operation. So it has quite a business impact, and it certainly fits with what we're trying to do at the city, and I think it's very commendable the work on conservation, because I shared this at our last countywide mayor's meeting. People just can't believe we've actually had the growth rate that's not phenomenal, but a good steady growth rate, and we're really basically at the same water usage. We can be pretty proud in our community of what we've done,
for their water resources. It's really the outlying unincorporated areas that don't have a single voice or a way to collectively pool their resources and make some of these projects happen. Mm-hmm. So the thought process is that you'll have the municipalities, you'll have a management district, one or more possibly, and then they can joint venture in different projects that benefit both entities.
Very good. Is there any talk out there about raising the height of the Salinas River Dam for Santa Margarita Lake?
There is. And now that the Nacimiento pipeline is in place, that possibility is being considered by all the North County water purveyors, whereas when it was originally proposed, I want to say back in the early 90s, there was a lot of dissent from the North County purveyors of doing that. But again, participating in a project like that, we'd have to make sure that we secured rights to that water. Could be very beneficial to us. The way I look at it, and it's a simplistic way, but I think it's an accurate representation. The Salinas River is like a pipeline. It's a conduit for us. And we can move water along that pipeline very effectively. It benefits primarily the municipalities. Because it's the source of recharge, especially in Paso Robles, that water takes so long to migrate out to those main pumping centers along Highway 46 East that using the Salinas as a conduit isn't going to help them nearly as much to municipalities. They'll see a benefit just from the municipalities offsetting their groundwater pumping, especially in Paso with their East River wells.
You had a slide up there that really struck me in terms of the water usage for Atascadero versus Paso Robles. And you had 16,382 acre-feet in the Paso Robles urban area and 11,987 acre-feet for the Atascadero urban area. And we're fairly roughly equivalent in population. I'm just wondering, why the big discrepancy?
Paso Robles hasn't been aggressive with their conservation program. They're really started, I'm going to say, 5 or 6 years ago when the issue became apparent. And so I don't think they've been able to reduce their customers' water use as effectively as we have.
Very good. Thank
you. They have a very good program now, and it's been very effective for them, but they're somewhat playing catch-up in that regard, I think.
I think it's striking. You know, it's a big difference, and we have much larger lots for our population. So. Okay. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Councilman Moreno.
On only a third of an acre, we're choosing to mulch certain areas of the plant. Oh, boy. Let's see. Along with the question about a potential county board, you said something about possibly a California board.
Yeah, a California Water District is again, it's a LAFCO-created entity, and it has its own governing board.
And that would that would still be the unincorporated areas.
That's correct.
Okay.
And a county water district is it's very similar, except the Board of Supervisors is the board there.
I see. Okay. So pretty much the same thing. It's just who would be supervising over that entity.
I guess I can be candid because I work for a private industry. The problem I see with a county district is you're going to have representation that isn't a stakeholder in the basin. And so I think it's more prone to politics.
Makes sense. I was taking notes and I missed the total amount of acre feet per year total in Atascadero. 16,000.
We pump about 6,000 acre feet a year, roughly. Some years more, some years less.
But the capacity, I think you said, was 16,000, or there was...
Oh, in the basin itself?
In the basin itself.
The perennial yield was estimated at 16,400 acre feet a year.
400. And that does not include the 2,000 from NACI?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. An excellent report.
Other council questions? Councilman or Mayor Pro Tem Sturtevant.
That was an excellent report, and I found very interesting the slide on Paso Robles and their groundwater recharge with rain, where it doesn't occur nowhere near as quickly as the Atascadero's. So it seems to me that if we take less from that over the underflow, is that what's going to help increase Paso's basin?
Well, Paso, in some ways, is in the same position we are. In the winter, and say even a less than average rainfall winter, there's plenty of water in the underflow. We can pump everything we need, and there's still water flowing north, and Paso Robles can pump everything they need, and there's still water flowing north of them. So that winter pumping out of the alluvium really has no effect on that on the basin. And that's one of the arguments I had in some of the initial studies is they didn't thoroughly analyze that relationship between alluvial pumping and groundwater pumping or the pumping of percolating waters. And I think in some cases they may have overestimated how much pumping is
actually to be. And
well, the urgency ordinance basically just put a stop to everything. It's not going to reverse the trend that's occurring out there. It's really a timeout to allow us to group together and figure out a way to manage it without accelerating the worsening of the situation.
I was curious, what will build the basin back up for Paso Robles?
I'm sorry?
What will it take to rebuild that up?
That's one of the things we're looking at. And there's in, I think, December of this year, the update of the groundwater model is going to occur. One of the questions that was asked is, how much additional water do we need to bring in to stabilize this or actually bring it back? Because we just don't have a good estimate because, again, the estimates for ag pumping are so, they're really just gross estimates.
Thank you.
Very good. And I see any other council questions? Councilman Kelly.
John, that was a very good report, very informative, and I would like to encourage anybody that wants to bring a new business or growth to come to Atascadero. We have plenty of water to serve you. But at what point, you know, it appears if you pump out more than you ever have, how you can never recover, can you? Won't it just slowly go down? I mean, I've been here 38 years, and you drive around, and all I see is vineyards, I mean, forever. And at some point, do you have too much where it won't recover, no matter what you do?
Well, from what I've heard from the hydrogeologists, the Paso Formation is not like some of the formations you have out in the San Joaquin Valley. You've probably seen or heard stories where they've pumped the groundwater, the ground has subsided, in some instances, 30 feet. And that's capacity that's lost in that basin. The Paso Robles formation doesn't react that way. Those pore spaces still exist. So if the pumping stops, eventually it will fill back up again. So we won't lose capacity. What we got to figure out is how do we manage the resources we have to the most efficient way, and how do we either stop or reverse the trends that we have, either by bringing in supplemental water or encouraging different uses on the property.
Yes. Councilman Sturdivant.
I'm sorry, I had one other quick question. I'm noticing that the water seems a lot harder this year in my home. Have you seen an increase in that this year, the hardness of the water?
Atascadero is blessed with, we have very high quality to be a little bit softer.
Well, thank you. I saw the difference. I had a feeling it had something to do with Nacimiento, but I wanted to ask you that question. So. Yeah.
But it does. The water quality changes depending on what zone we pull the water from.
Thank you.
No other council questions? I'll just add another comment, but I do want to open it up to the public if you have some questions. So go ahead, and if you would come to the mic, and John, if you would stay close by, because we'll have you answer from the lectern as well. So any questions on water in Atascadero?
Okay, my name is Nancy Hare. I'm a resident of Atascadero. I have a question for John. You stated that we have 16,400 acre-feet of water to use, and we're currently using 15,755 acre-feet of water per year. Our basin is brimming full. We have 2,000 acre-feet of Nacimiento water that you're pumping in to recharge, right? Okay. So my question is, we are all shareholders of Atascadero Mutual Water Company. The shareholders are the community of Atascadero. The community of Atascadero enjoys Atascadero. They enjoy Atascadero Lake. Okay, Atascadero Lake was a mess this weekend. I live there, I know. And I just think you can't brush it off that Atascadero Lake, you know, doesn't have any water and all the fish die off every number of years. I think it's an embarrassment to the city, and I think it needs to be rectified in some way. And I don't understand why, as shareholders, when we're paying for this water already and it's not being used, but we are paying for it, that water can't go into Atascadero Lake. And I'm also wondering about the three unused wells that Atascadero Lake has that are not utilized or being utilized now, why that water can't go into Atascadero Lake. Atascadero Lake is one of our prime resources along with this beautiful building and the beauty of Atascadero. Atascadero is beautiful. People come to the lake every day. Sometimes it's gridlock around the lake, so many people enjoying the lake. And I hear the comments that they make about the lake and how sad it is. There's trash around the lake that is not being picked up. I personally picked up, I don't know how many bags of broken glass around the lake. I think there should be a lake cleanup day, where like the creek cleanup day, to clean up the lake. The lake needs lots of improvements. You have to up that lake. You know, we're already shareholders. We're paying for it. You know, why don't you give it to us? Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I'm sure glad John was here to answer this question for us instead of giving it to our city engineer. Welcome, John.
I'm glad to be here. Well, some of the questions I can't answer, that they're better answered by the city engineer. As far as just giving the water, there is a cost to, the way I always care, the water is free. It's getting it from where it needs to be to where you want it, or where it is to where you want it. So there's a cost associated with pumping the water out of the ground, moving it, treating it. We still have to treat it because it goes into the distribution system, and then discharging it into the lake. When, like Russ said, we have to dechlorinate it. Just giving that water, absorbing that cost, puts that burden on all the shareholders, and it's really up to the water company board to decide, is that the appropriate to share that cost with the shareholders? Is that really what the shareholders want? Personally, I don't think that's the best use of potable water, especially in a drought situation when you don't know, is this going to be a 3-year drought cycle, 4 or 5? And again, like I explained, that water that's in the groundwater basin or the Paso Robles formation is essentially held in reserve. And granted, we are bringing in Nacimiento water, but if we're in a 4 or 5 year drought, maybe that water source will diminish. And so is that the best use of the resource? And that's really for, you know, the water company board to evaluate and decide.
Thank you. Are there other questions while we have our expert here? Seeing no one approach, I'll close a public comment on that item. And again, thank you. I know, I think I could truly say for all of the council, we love our city, we love Atascadero Lake and the whole complex, the pavilion, the bandstand, the zoo, the lake. It's a great community resource. And E.G. Lewis, not only did he build a road to the beach, he really built a lake. Actually, he built the pond. And it has its limitations, and I think living in a Mediterranean climate as we do, I think there's something we have to learn to live with our ecosystem in a sense, too. I think we are certainly looking at that. We are certainly doing what we can. If Jerry Clay were here, he'd say it's about time to build that big pool somewhere in town. But I think it's something we'll have to consider. What kind of recreational resources, and we're going to be getting into marketing, which is going to touch on things for visitors here, too. So we may have more on this discussion, but I did want to just, again, reiterate, I think the water company has done a very good job managing. We're very fortunate in our area. I always like to link in our wastewater treatment plant, because I think we really have an ecosystem in Atascadero. People don't like me to say this, but yeah, we drink our sewer water, but it's filtered through a whole series of retention basins. We have one of the lowest cost wastewater treatment plants in the county, again, that parallels with the water company. And again, we are managing a resource very efficiently. So I know it's a tough thing. We are struggling with what more we can do with the lake. So with that, I think unless our city engineer would like to add something first, then we'll bring back to council.
Just real quick, Ms. Sahir asked about one of the wells out there. There are 3 wells. 2 of them are dry and don't work. The one that is functional is at the south end of the lake. Part of the Yellow Rose Ranch development was dedicated to the city. That well is pretty ineffective. It is a very shallow well. It's only 40 or 50 feet deep. It produces about 20 or 30 gallons a minute for about 4 or 5 minutes, and then it shuts off. So it doesn't generate any real water. We've had it running early in the summer, and it was making a little bit of a puddle there by the Santa Rosa Bridge. It never got to the lake. The lake was receding faster than that well even had a chance to possibly keep up with it or make any kind of significant difference. So we ended up using budgeted funds for normally operate for the aeration. And so, but it wasn't making an effect on the lake. If it was, we would have continued to run it.
Thank you. And a lot of the efforts with the aeration was to improve the water quality of the remaining water, because as it gets shallower, it produces some other problems for the fish. Thank you. Councilman Kelly.
Yes, John, I was wondering, the information that you provided tonight was very informative. Is that available on the water company's webpage? Because I know myself, and I would imagine the other council members, were constantly getting asked about the water situation, thinking that we have a municipal water company instead of a privately owned.
Taking maintaining your water system, it's something that I'm very proud of.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John, could you give us the website address, please?
It's www.amwc.us.
Councilwoman Moreno.
Just because the lake did get brought up, and I thought I would like to, just for the public's edification, to discuss the fish and wildlife and the permitting and what we're trying to do, but being held up by greater government entities than we are.
Maybe we could, and we are actually working with higher levels of government, trying to see if we could do some things. But permitting is very challenging on waterways. Maybe our city engineer could just speak to that briefly, of some of the efforts we're going through that might enable us to do some more work in the near future.
Yeah, it's part of the, the lake being down, like you said, it's a natural process. We thought this might be an opportunity to do some improvements, maybe do some removal of some sediments in the lake. So we, several weeks ago, we met with the representatives of the California Department of Fish and Game, talked through the permitting process, kind of the things that we had in mind that we wanted to do. It's going to be a lengthy process. We're in the process of putting an application together, drilling some test borings to see the depth of the sediment out there. So we're in the. So we're in the process of getting that application together. The Friends of the Lake group that we've established is very interested in seeing that move forward. So we will be in the coming weeks submitting that application, but they estimated that it would take 6 to 8 months to probably get through that process to the point where we could remove sediment from the lake bottom.
Yeah. So one of our challenges in almost every topic is that we don't have as much control as we would like to on a lot of these issues, and there are a number of organizations, whether the Fish and Game, Army Corps of Engineers, Regional Water Quality Control Boards, there's a number of agencies that have overlapping jurisdiction, and it prevents us from being as proactive as we would like to be sometimes in intervening. But we are actually, all of us are working in different areas to do what we can. We are looking at getting a meeting together with CanDo that are humanly possible anyway, and thank our city engineer for keeping up on that. And again, thank you, Mr. Neal, for being here tonight on updating on the water. Well, I think, unless there's any other comments on this item,
good.
Very good. We weren't sure on the maneuvering there. We will close that item and move on to the next item on the agenda, which is review of the City of Atascadero's marketing plan. And I will be stepping down from hearing this report or discussing it, as I am involved with a business that is working on events as well as a location that pays transient occupancy tax. And so, just to avoid any appearance of potential conflict of interest, I will step out and not participate
This allows, of course, just hearing a report would be fine for me to sit in on, but we want to leave the opportunity that council may have some discussion, you may have some thoughts to share, and we want to have that be an open process. So I will turn it over to Mayor Pro Tem Sturtevant. You're probably going to have to come and get me because there's no guarantees the electronics will work that I will hear what's going on here. You want to take a... Let's take a five-minute break, then we'll come back for this last item.
Safely out of the room, so we can go ahead and move forward with the staff report on
website design and implementation of June Wine Month, social media development, event promotion, and ad placement. We're now a couple of months into phase two of the marketing plan, so I've asked TJA Advertising and Mental Marketing to come and give a presentation on the marketing plan and how we're doing. So we have Mark and his crew here with us tonight, and I will turn it over to Mark.
Good evening, Council. I'm Mark Elterman. It's a pleasure to be here to give you an update on your marketing efforts. I'm joined tonight by John Sorgenfrey, who runs TJA Advertising, as well as our account manager, Margaret Shepherd. And this is her first council meeting, and a nice lengthy one, but also one that's a pleasure in our magnificent Rotunda building. So it's a real pleasure to be here. So what we're planning on doing is giving you a quick overview of where we are in the marketing plan, as Rochelle had mentioned, answer any other questions that you may have, and then open it up as an ongoing basis for idea generation, which is very, very important to us. And hopefully I can use this properly to... Yes. I mentioned our agency teams. We are two firms that are working for you on your behalf. We operate as a seamless team, however, TJA Advertising and Mental Marketing, we've been working together for quite some time on a number of accounts, and it is a real pleasure to work together on your behalf. So I mentioned myself and John, as well as Bill Stansfield, who is not here tonight, but he handles your creative direction. So any questions about creative, John and I will fake it, but Bill will actually ultimately answer anything related to creative. Rick Turton is our webmaster, and he manages your Visit Atascadero destination website, and he's not here this evening. I guess it's pretty important to just recognize what our goals are for this effort, because everything that we do is goal-oriented. And in marketing, it's very important to specify your goals and also, to the best of your ability, measure your progress towards those goals. As Rochelle had mentioned, in the marketing plan that you adopted in October, our goals that were approved were to establish a unified marketing roadmap. By that, we mean here's a unified marketing plan where everybody's marching together as a city, and that is what you have before you. We also are tasked with prioritizing our marketing investment to achieving our established goals in terms of incremental revenue. The reason for that is because we don't have a lot of money to spend, so we need to make sure that we spend it wisely by our priorities. We also, in this plan, are tasked with establishing a distinct and consistent destination brand. So by that we mean visually, the messaging, everything we say to convey the assets and the desire for consumers to come here to Atascadero should be also very important in what we're doing is to generate awareness in Atascadero's key assets and all the great activities that we have before us. And to the best of our abilities to create marketing efficiencies and partnership collaboration. By that we mean let's market as efficiently as possible. We don't have any luxuries of marketing waste here. So let's work together with the county VCB, with your tourism partners, as best we can so that we can get the most impressions for Atascadero as possible. So those are really our goals. And again, we do our level best to measure our progress towards those goals. Well, how do we do that? Well, one simple way of doing it is because most of our efforts are driving folks to your new Visit Atascadero website. Everything you do in that regard is highly measurable. So we're measuring on a consistent basis and reporting on a monthly basis, you know, how many folks are coming to the websites. Year over year, how many folks used to come during this period of this month last year? Okay, and we can, you know, we can gauge how we're doing towards that. How many people are looking at different pages of your website? How many folks are looking at your events? How many folks, and this is very, very important, are looking at Visit Atascadero and then going to a lodging page because we want them, obviously, to book a room. How many times on a monthly basis do we get a lodging referral? Okay, so that's actually even better. Those that go to a lodging site and are actually tracked by going to that site and referred to that particular website. So those are some very simple measurement tools that we offer you every month. We also think it's important as an aggregate measurement tool of measuring your TOT tax. And that's something that the city staff is able to do on a quarterly basis. You know, what is your TOT revenue coming in? Now, can we as a marketing agency take any real credit for that? Not really, because there are so many dynamics that are involved in TOT, right? It could be the difference between a hotel opening up or expanding or a restaurant coming and going, as well as the general economy. But as long as you're measuring those TOT gains against your competitive set, you can kind of gauge how things are going in our collective efforts. And we think that's important for you to pay attention to. We do in all of our clients and all our destination clients. Campaign response. Every campaign that you do has some sort of response, right? Whether it be a giveaway, whether it be email subscriptions, everything, sharing those postings with their friends. And those are very trackable tools. We also, in the beginning of this endeavor, we referred in our plan to the countywide VCB awareness studies. The awareness study basically gauged travelers in our core markets, how aware are they in all of the countywide assets, countywide as a whole, as well as the individual destinations, right? And so that study is best leveraged a couple of years from now. We want to be able to see, okay, how did our branding awareness efforts create an uptick in the awareness, right? So you do that in a pre-survey, which they've done, and then a post-survey in about a year from now. Okay, and that's something that you want to do in concert with our tourism partners at the VCB. There are lots of ways to annualize a return on investment. There's no perfect way of doing it, but in the destination marketing area, it tends to be leveraging how many people have booked a room and have stayed here. And so we think it's going to be very important as a destination to, in this particular arena, to work very closely with your lodging partners on that, because there's real return on investment that can be gained there. And then there are other qualitative results. Sometimes you'll see, you know, areas where people will just be calling into the Chamber of Commerce and they're saying, hey, we really appreciated this great brochure that came in, or that have participated in some events like the wine festival, and you see some of these the growth of these events, and by that we can at least start to, you know, get a handle on what's happening on a qualitative basis. Okay, who are we talking to in your marketing efforts? Well, Our focus is travelers from our core drive markets, Central Valley, L.A., Orange County, San Diego, Santa Barbara, Ventura, Monterey, Carmel, Salinas, and the Bay Area. We don't have money to broadcast nationally, except with some of the things that we can do with Grape Encounters, where we can spread the word a little bit. Some of the areas we can do in public relations, where we'll get some writers and journalists from around the country that we'll bring here, that helps us spread out our message a little bit. But by and large, if we're spending money on advertising, we have to really be focused on those drive markets, because those are the folks that are coming here and staying with us. Generally, they're empty nesters. They're traveling midweek and in the shoulder season. And the wine, culinary, and event attendees that are visiting the county for multiple nights, because we want them to stay here longer. And there are a lot of ways we do that. Increasingly, as your marketing moves along, we'll be able to target leisure traveler groups. They are very specific in their interests. Sometimes they're military or social or fraternal groups that are going to come in here. And we want to serve them because we have some great facilities here. We have associations and meeting and wedding planners. Those are a really good market for us. And generally, because of our facilities, these are small to medium-sized group. We don't have a large convention center here, so we're not going to even attempt to market to the large corporate groups of 300-400 people, because we really don't stand much of a chance. And like we said, we get a lot of weddings here, so wedding planners are on our radar as well. Okay, so that's who we're trying to reach on a regular basis. But we really are focused primarily on those empty nesters, primarily in our drive markets. Okay, so John will talk a little bit about where we have we've come through the phase one aspect of your marketing plan.
Well, thank you. I just want to say that it's an honor to be here on your agenda in this great building. We had the privilege of going on some initial tours while we watched the construction, which seems like it was yesterday, but lots transpired, and I'm sure you're all very proud of how it's turned out. It's magnificent. And it will be one of our tourism assets that we're certainly going to focus on, and that we have been. Actually, the phase one is, as I'm happy to say, has been completed. And I think this is another area to, as when we talk about measurement, these are the things that we said we were going to do, and we have fulfilled those now. And just as a point of review, we've initially what we did is we assessed the market. We interviewed various stakeholders within the market, actually members of the council. We created an approved marketing plan, created a brand toolkit, which basically is our ability to have a consistent look, slogan, center of the heart of the Central Coast. Implemented a new advertising template, again, to create that consistency and also to save on costs. So once we establish our advertising, then we have a template to work from. We're not recreating new ads at every moment. Set up new social media tools and promotions. As Mark mentioned, we created a Facebook for you that has basically started with zero, and we're now accumulating fans very rapidly. I can about ready to start the shoulder season campaign, which I'll tell you a little bit about in a moment. So the branding approach, as you all know, and you had this presented to you, is the being the center of the Central Coast, and also the heart of California. The brand speaks to location, heritage, and also the personality of our citizens. So it's not just heart as a center point, but it's also heart, the feeling that the city has, the pride that it has. Mark talked about families searching for value and also safety and coming to a place that they're comfortable in bringing their families. Also, there's a degree of some baby boomer nostalgia of towns that they grew up in that they want to share with their children. We realize that Atascadero has that unique selling point to itself. The primary branding tool is the website. We've basically revamped the site totally. We're now at a couple thousand visits a month. We started with a couple hundred. It's growing very rapidly. We use that as a primary measurement tool, but it's also our center point for fulfillment. This is where everyone is directed to go through all the marketing. This is where they'll book their room. This is where they'll find out about activities. This is where they will be sold about Atascadero and why they should come here and make this a part of their vacation experience. So for targeting the visitor audience, we have a WordPress setup, which is very flexible. This provides city staff the ability to go in and do some things. Mark talked about Facebook postings. It's our intention to have city staff take over some of these duties. We're sort of work ourselves out of a job. We'll still be there for you, but some of these other things we want to train and make sure that that you're not always going to be needing our staff to do that to save on the budget. Mobile responsiveness, when we created the site, we made it mobile ready for all the mobile users out there, which is growing at an incredibly rapid rate. There's links to all the lodging, dining, and attractions, all the strategic partners, has all the wineries and events. It can be expanded as we get more and more constituent promotions and lodging specials. We're looking at expanding it in that direction. Update and report monthly. Search marketing ongoing, which is SEO, making sure that the site appears on Google in various ways. And we've already exceeded the 2012 traffic in 6 months of the launch. So we're very, and there's another statistic not up here that I'll share with you, which we're very proud of. We've provided almost 1,000 referrals to the hotels in the last 4 months, which basically started from a 0 point. So again, our brand. We've been in the process of doing some extensive photo shoots. Certainly the rotunda is one of those, but also family lifestyle shots, dining shots, shopping, and these will become part of that branding toolkit that we'll utilize for the website, Facebook, and also for the various ads that we do. Also, micro videos. I know that we probably shared this statistic with you before, but YouTube is the second most vehicle used aside from Google for searches. When people want to find out about things, they're looking for a place to stay, they're evaluating their experience. Now there's so much content on YouTube, that's where people are going to find it. So we want to be able to populate that. We've got a couple of these videos done, completed now, and we're also going to be working on the other two that you see there, Wine Country and Things to Do. We also use these for YouTube advertising, which is very targeted to the demographics that Mark described earlier. So just as a wrap-up for our advertising for the shoulder season, I mentioned the online tactics, which is YouTube, Google Display, AdWords, Facebook. We also have a campaign up in San Jose, the sanjosemercurynews.com, latimes.com, fresnob.com, and bakersfield.com. These are all print vehicles, but all online, all utilizing their website. Another reason for this, too, and again, getting back to measurement, these are all very trackable. We should be able to see when these campaigns are launched, the Mercury News being a referral site, LA Times being a referral site. We can tell you exactly how many people viewed that YouTube ad that we placed, how many fans were garnered out of the Facebook ads that we did, and the Google Display words, that can be very trackable, too. And then print, well, our strategy there is we don't have a lot of money to spend on print, but there are some very important vehicles there. We wanted to run in the major guides. The state of California obviously attends many conventions. They do a lot of international work. We want to ride on the coattails of the state of California's Visit California, and so we're in that guide. The county VCB, of course, the outreach that they do, we want to be a part of that. Slow County Access, and then California Road Trips, which is part of Sunset Magazine. You've already heard about the great work that Grape Encounters is doing. We're very excited about that association. And then also there is some budget attributed to cable and Charter Communications running that out in the Central Valley. So I'm going to let Mark talk about the other outreach. And again, it's a privilege to work on your account. We appreciate it very much.
All right, well, we don't have a lot of money for advertising, so we need to leverage so that we can boost any promotion on your Facebook pages. We're also populating a Pinterest and Instagram areas in social media so that we can just create additional engagement. Database is also very important. Say we run a promotion on Facebook. Well, we want to capture more than just their like. We really want their email. We want to hear from them. We want to re-engage that potential customer. So the chamber has a visitors
email database, and our charge is to help grow that database. The good news is that when we run even a Facebook promotion, we can get a lot of emails, and that'll help us, you know, continue to re-engage these people. So, like for instance, in Wine Month, we were able to collect nearly 1,000 email addresses. Well, that all goes into the chamber, and then we work very closely with Linda. We're creating additional email templates to really support this brand so that we can really blast out on a regular basis to these folks who are already predisposed to the Atascadero brand in some way. Bi-monthly is about right, but we're going to test it over time to see how people like the email. What are their interests? You know, where are they coming from? Are they more interested in zoo specials or lodging specials? We can find out a lot about them and serve them in that way. And that's some of the things that we want to do, particularly for the lodging community, because the lodging community is very effective at using email to promote their specials and packages, and we really want to support that. We also have a direct outreach through visitors guides and certified folders. A lot of the visitors guides will cover Atascadero already, and so that's a real direct access in telling our story beyond a printed ad. We're also creating a new brochure for you, and it should be done within the next few days, and it's going to be a very handsome brochure about all the great things here in the heart of the Central Coast, and that's going to be displayed, 40,000 copies of that, through certified folders, as well as through all the event distribution, like, say, for the Central Coast, where we're physically handing those brochures out to folks. We're also recognizing that the way to really brand a destination is by having journalists talk about you. For you. So we do have a PR effort whereby we're going to be sending out press releases on a routine basis, quarterly, about what's new in Paso Robles. And the city is already augmenting that. I'm sorry. Yeah, because we just did one in Paso Robles and a night stay, and then they really experience and they cover Atascadero very well that way. John, you want to talk about events?
Well, all city area events, what we're working on right now is to try to establish a criteria, which the main part of that criteria being events that create overnight stays. So those events we want to add additional coverage to, whether it be Facebook postings, certainly promoting it on the website, and also if it's timely enough to where we're doing an ad campaign to include some of those signature events. Also, we recognize that there's a lot of events that are local in nature that if somebody's already staying here that they might want to attend. So we're going to have a special section of the website to accommodate those as well. Also, it's real important to have contesting and promoting the event in that way. We also look at the types of events that are going to be done in the mid, again, in our target period of the midweek and off season to promote. And also to assist the event promoters to help them promote their events. So in other words, when the event promoter is looking for funds to promote their event, they can come to us and we can use a lot of the tactics that are already in place that that will help to promote that particular event. And, you know, boost regional events like the Wine Festival, Savor, being, again, riding on those coattails of those major events and making sure that Atascadero has a significant presence there. And Grape Encounters is going to be a great vehicle to promote events as well. Want me to do what's next, or do you want to do that? Again, right now we're heavily involved in Savor. You're all very aware of Savor the Central Coast. We're doing a giveaway, adventure tour, an exhibit. As Mark mentioned, the brochures that we're designing for you will be distributed there. The press release, we're working on those. The shoulder season promotion, which we just outlined for you, and also supporting the new TBID and its goals, and continuing to anticipate growth in our program. And with that, we'll answer any questions the council may have.
Any councilor? Oh, Councilman Kelly.
Yes, I believe this will be for Mark. I think earlier you said that you weren't putting much emphasis on conferences or conventions. Recently, ground was just broken on our new Marriott Hotel on the north end of town, which is 130-plus rooms. And they also have a, I believe, a 5,000-square-foot conference area. Would now be the time to start advertising for that?
Couple of years that advertising small space in meetings and conferences, journals and things like that really don't pay off. Okay, they're very expensive tools, and the best ways to actually get those conferences to come is to physically have a person to go out at those conferences and actually promote the destination and the property. So the best ways to do that is really right now through the VCB, because the VCB will go to the primary conferences to meet with meeting planners. Ideally, each destination is present, and a lot of the hoteliers will come themselves, and they pitch their own properties as well. So what will happen is that typically you send a destination manager, and that destination manager will be alongside the county VCB and talk about those particular assets, those meeting assets in the destination. And generally, that person has some established relationships, right? That's really the way. And to your point, it takes a long time, but we, from a advertising standpoint, there are a couple advertising vehicles that we could use, like smart meetings and things like that. We don't have those in our strategic plan to place now. But we should certainly take a look at it. It's just in the past we've seen fairly poor return on those ad investments.
I just brought it up because in the past I know I've run across people who own like large businesses that do come here for the weekend, and they do fall in love with the area. And if there was just, you know, maybe a little blurb or something on the web page that said, you know, you can have conferences here, and then, you know, that might just plant the seed for them to come here, or even relocate their businesses and what have you.
Absolutely. John.
I just wanted to add, I think that's an excellent suggestion as far as the website. You know, we would certainly place it on the website as a new feature, something that people would be able to see under the conference area. And then also, and I can tell you that, again, from past clients, that we've run pretty extensive campaigns in, like, the Start Smart Meetings magazines and those. And you're just in so much competition with Hawaii and all these other places. But there is, that being said, there is, as Mark mentioned, about the press releases of what's new in Atascadero. You know, running that over in Fresno, running that in Bakersfield, letting those people know over there that for their smaller meetings, like, say, a car dealer group or somebody like that that's got a certain amount of people that...
Yes, you mentioned a point about the type of people that are coming here from Ventura or L.A. or the Valley, whatever it may be, and also the special interest activity travelers. Is there some way to figure out why they're coming so we can capitalize on that, whether they're coming for a special event or they're coming for the wine tasting or to go to the beach? Going down to Pismo, but they stopped here because it's cheaper, or, you know, there may be something that we could use as a handle to grab them and keep them there?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good question and a really good point. And I think one of the best ways to do that is working very closely with your lodging community, because when people come in and they check in, the front desk and the lodging community just has incredible knowledge of that guest. Right, so in the genesis of your marketing plan is we spoke with them at great length in terms of, you know, what their profile guest was. However, to your point, that guest shifts over time. You know, different groups of people come here for various reasons, like different events and different purposes, different times of year. So, as an ongoing measure, there is something that we were talking about supporting the TBID as it comes on board, is that I think it'd be really important for us to consistently, at least quarterly, spend some time with your lodging operators in terms of their profile guests. As an ongoing matter, because like John had mentioned as well, is that you have a marketing plan, but it is fluid. You know, you're not set on doing any one particular. If we're saying that something is happening from, say, art and cultural groups, and now we have so much emphasis on art and culture, we're able to target them quite effectively, particularly online. And then we can also go after them on a group basis, okay, where we can say, bring your groups here. You know, we have just the right facilities to do that. It's not rocket science in doing that, but it does take an ongoing management effort to work with your lodging operators to get that data.
Well, that's kind of where I was going, that it may be the visitor who's coming for the art galleries. We might have a page you can click on to see where they're located in the county or nearby, or it could be antique stores or motorcycle shops, whatever it may be that they're coming for. But we need to link in so we know what they're looking for so we can respond to this.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually a really good point in terms of your website and your mobile. Because, you know, we have lots of different events and activities on your mobile. And one of the things that we do track are, you know, folks that actually click in different events and different activities. And from that, absolutely, we can report. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, so I know very, that's very true, and it's growing all the time.
It sure
it's
is.
Very
so that,
important.
So that's a really good point that you're making, you know, that we need to pay attention to those dynamics and those folks that are clicking and tapping through and reacting.
And you mentioned also that you have a means of assisting event promotions. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering how you will do that. Let's just use an example of cruise night. We had cruise night on a mm-hmm. Friday, and then we had the car show in the park on mm-hmm. Saturday, so we had an opportunity to capture some of them to stay overnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, for certain events, everything is, you know, promoted on the website. Certain events, as John had mentioned, you know, where we're really spending extra money. That means advertising dollars, a promotion, a getaway promotion where you get a two-night stay, like, for instance, the Wine Month promotion. So that's one way that we can do that and get a larger audience to come and sample the product. In many cases, what also John had mentioned is that some event promoters will come and say, you know, please promote us or give us money, right? A lot of ways we can do that. We can get out a Facebook promotion, we can get out press releases, we can do really anything that is commensurate with that particular event, with the highest priority being when our hotels really need the support. Particularly the shoulder season, off season, and midweek. That is really what keeps us awake at night in terms of our priorities.
Mm-hmm. And one final point, and then I'll let you go. I know that there are cities that offer specials to locals only. Cambria, for instance, I know has something to do with the Cambria Pines Lodge, and they offer to these specials for locals only, and you have to access it a certain way or you don't get the special. Mm-hmm. Do we have some way of promoting something so we can do that in the shoulder season and get people from Cal Poly, let's say, or Pismo, wherever it may be, within our county or general area?
We certainly, I guess the short answer to that is that we can do anything, but we can't do everything. Okay, so yes, there are a lot of ways we can do that. For instance, we have, like we mentioned, a database. Right now on Facebook, most of a great many of your Facebook audience is local, right? And that is a great way of pushing out local specials. You know, we have 1,000 people that are local. They have, you know, hundreds of thousands of their fans collectively. And that is something that you can do an immediate promotion for locals only and do it as an ongoing basis.
Well, but hey, could we ask you a couple of questions? And that could be, of course, helpful in many ways. So just putting that out there.
That's exactly right.
You know, we talk yes.
I think that one of the things we found, that's a great resource, as Mark said, and I'm sure that there's a way that the hotelier could be compensated, certainly, you know, at a media rate or whatever. The way to make them fill those surveys out is to offer them an opportunity to win an overnight stay. The amount of increase will be substantial because then people have some incentive to do it. Otherwise, people are really skeptical. You know, they think they're going to get, you know, emailed or whatever, but
right.
It's amazing just the opportunity to win, and we wouldn't have to do very many of them. That would be a way to increase the response, but that would be one way to do it. And it's also keeping the questions short,
right.
You know, like 5 questions, because, you know, let's face it, they're checking in, they want to go relax, they want to, you know, they're done. But I think something like that, either on checkout or at check-in, if there was an incentive, I think that would work.
We talk a lot about being revenue neutral, and in this situation, we obviously want to be revenue positive. And so there are all of these, like I'm looking at the staff report with the evaluation of plan success, and you know, click-through rates and Facebook likes and engagement and all of these things. And I'm wondering, at what point do you put actual measurable goals to these things? So, you know, I know that you said TOT, it's kind of hard, and, you know, it's, I guess, maybe more of an art than a science, and I understand that. But I'm wondering, back in, may have been January, and a few of us went down to San Luis Obispo, and the visitors, I think they're VBO or what, VCB, they did several presentations, and in one of the presentations there were a number of statistics of all the different cities throughout the Central Coast in terms of their tourism draw, and Atascadero was, you know, at the bottom or second to the bottom in most of those. And so I'm wondering, you know, maybe that's a way to say, okay, Atascadero had this percentage or compared to the rest of the county, and, you know, setting some measurable goals that we want to get here and here, so that, you know, you can say, okay, Facebook likes of 954, I think it is, but were we shooting for 2,000 and we hit 954, or were we shooting for 500 and we almost doubled it? So I'm wondering about some measurability with these numbers, and I know it can be challenging, but I know there's got to be a way in summary.
And we feel like that with the marketing that we're doing and the efforts that you have put forward that you want to see happen in the city, that we can do that. If we could guarantee a certain amount, at least right now, we'd probably be retired. I mean, right. it's difficult to do that. It's not a cop-out. It's just trying to be fair about what we really think we can do. The first level I think that you need to measure us by is, did we deliver on the things that we said we were going to produce? And I think we have done that, and I hope you feel that way too. Now we really are having the tools in place to start building on that. And as far as Facebook goes, again, you know, I would hope to double that within, you know, say 6 months. And I would hope to do at least that. Website visits, we're at about 2,000 a month. I would like to see that doubled. But I, again, to say that we can do that and guarantee that, we really can't. But we want to see significant increase.
If I could interrupt you for one moment. I'm not asking for a guarantee. I'm just thinking, you know, what are we shooting for? And so, for example, and I'm not a marketing expert. I've done some in my time, certainly. But if you look at something, say, direct mail, that's not what we're doing, clearly. But direct mail, they say if you get a 2 to 3% response, that's average. And 3%, I mean, you're doing pretty well. So I'm thinking with some of these things, there can be sort of a standard that if you hit that standard, you know, we're hitting the mark. If you go over it, great. If you're way below that, something needs to be tweaked. Mm-hmm. So I'm certainly not saying you have to hit something. We're looking for a guarantee, but kind of what are we aiming to achieve here, numbers?
Well, I think we're aiming to achieve, you know, greater exposure, greater success of those things. I suppose that with, you know, we probably need to really think about if we were going to come down to numbers, because while we're not guaranteeing that, you are asking for specific numbers or percentages, and I think we need to really give that some thought. Again, how we're measured by our current clients, are they successful? Do they see growth on a yearly basis? Again, although TOT does fluctuate, you know, is TOT, is it increasing? Are you not lagging behind, you know, the other people in the county, even though we don't see them necessarily as true competitors? So really the measure of success is, are we moving forward? And are we moving forward at a rate that you're comfortable with? And, you know, I think that, again, it's a hard measurement number as far as, you know, are we going to be at 1,500 fans at a certain period of time? It's hard to say. But
and all these goals, which are fabulous goals, I think you guys to date have done a wonderful job, and I really appreciate all the work that's gone into it. And so as I look at this evaluation of plan success, for example, click-through rates, but we don't say what the success is. Do you know what I mean? So we say success of click-through rates, but what is the success? What is that? How do we measure that? How do we know that's successful? So there's this whole list in the staff report of evaluation of plan success, but no way to really evaluate it by, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, I think also, again, starting at such a basic level of where we've gone with the marketing. You know, we didn't inherit an ongoing marketing program where we're looking at a website and saying, you know, normal websites that have been around this long should be at this particular level. It would be a little bit easier to do. It's a virgin territory for us to see what we can do for you as well. We're comfortable that we can. We think there's a lot of attributes here. We think that our brand is correct with being the center. We think pushing value and pushing the aspect of a nostalgic town that's friendly and enjoyable to come to. We also believe that we will get some overflow from Paso Robles events and things like that, but we're not just anticipating those. What we're anticipating is that when they come here, even if it's because of an overflow situation, they'll come back. And that's what we're really trying to nurture, too, by capturing the people that do come through these wine promotions and various other things to keep them informed with the, you know, email newsletters and that type of thing.
And so, but is there even goals in terms of how many emails you want to be capturing, you know, things like that, like to increase that reach?
We can certainly, you know, talk about that and see if there's some things that we're comfortable with doing. We're not measured by that on any of our other clients. Our clients really basically feel like their growth is there, that we're delivering the deliverables that we promised, that we're staying within budget or delivering under budget, that the goals that we set for the marketing program are being carried out and being met. At this early stage, honestly, that's about the best we can do for
measuring success. And I appreciate the early stage. I'm not saying, like, as of today there should have been something achieved, but, you know, we're talking about, you know, long term, like 24 months and where that would be. So, and I don't know, maybe I'm the only one that has these thoughts or concerns, but I'm just thinking of some sort of measurability, whether it's looking at some of those things from VBC, and Brian, you were there with me at that meeting down in.
And I think that what we could do is, if we're looking at a 24-month goal, then I think we could, you know, try to put some more measurable numbers toward that. If we're looking at it the next 2 months, what are we going to do? And I understand that you're not asking for that. So I think we could, you know, come up with some bench lines for that. And what our long-term goals in the end of 2 years, what we would hope that we would have achieved for you, we can certainly do that.
Okay. I would like to see that. And one other thing unrelated to that is, we've been talking about grape encounters tonight, and I'm thinking to have them somewhere on the site, just in terms of, I think that gives us a little cachet that we have this show broadcasting in Atascadero. Mm-hmm. And so to have that, not to promote them per se, because I know we don't want to promote any one business over another, but yet that website is also promoting businesses, so there's something to that, but that it's promoting us as that heart and as that center.
Right, and we are on their site, you know, that joint linkage, and it's certainly not lost on us claiming that, because as was mentioned, I mean, they're in a lot of our target markets, and they do promote, you know, the fact that they are headquartered here. And I'm sure there's a lot of people in those markets that are going to look it up and try to understand where that is as a result of them doing that. So
just to add to that, Council Moreno, we are getting a really nice spot on the homepage for Grape Encounters right now. That
Great.
Also includes linkable podcasting. So
fabulous.
It's one of those ongoing projects, and you know. There are actually a fairly long list of projects for your website that we don't want to bore you with right now.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Councilmember Kelly.
Thank you. Yes, I think on this advertising and promotion, I know in the past I've had businesses. I had one that was very successful that I never spent a penny on advertising or promotion. It was mostly word of mouth. I had another business where I spent a lot of money on advertising, and it's a long, long-term time frame that you have to use, and it's somewhat difficult to gauge what the return is on your exact investment on the promotion, only the fact that you have become successful. And I think that will show with sales tax increase, as we have more special events, which will be our responsibility in the chamber, that we have more and more people. This is more of a team deal. We're all in this together. And I don't think this one program is going to be the program that's going to give you the exact numbers that you want. We're going to be working in conjunction with Main Street, the Chamber of Commerce.
We look at this as we want this to be a long-term relationship. We want you to feel like that this money has been invested wisely and that you want to continue with us. You know, my firm has worked with Pismo Beach for over 15 years. I worked with Morro Bay for over 17, and they took a break, and we're back working with them again. That's the kind of law, and as the there's basically there it's a accumulation of a lot of things to where you feel success out of this campaign and this effort, and we feel comfortable that we'll be able to achieve that.
Well, actually, I actually echo Councilmember Moreno's. That was actually my thought was, you know, when I look at goals, I think of them as SMART goals. I like them to be specific. I like them to be, what is the M? I forgot. Not manageable. No, that's not it. Anyway, specific. It'll be realistic. It'll be timely. It'll be something that we can actually achieve. Oh, measurable. I'm sorry. Measurable. So I'm sorry. I'm tired. In thinking of that, I agree with her, but I also look at we're going through phase one, which you guys have, great report. It's a lot of things you guys have done. There's a lot of information. Now you're going on to phase two. If I understand correctly, there's more of an opportunity to really hone in on that information, to really get those things that we can have some really clear understanding of where our money is going and how well it's being spent. So did I understand?
Well, and there will be, you know, not saying that we're not going to provide numbers. I mean, that shoulder season campaign, we'll be able to tell you how many people viewed those YouTube ads, how many fans resulted from the Facebook, as I talked about. So there's going to be very measurable, trackable things associated with the shoulder season. It's the overall, you know, sort of big picture that's tough. And again, and I'll give you an example of one of our clients that we took over, and they had a goal of having a certain percentage maintained to go to their state page. And the agency before us gave away iPods. So everybody went to that state page, and we dug deeper, though, and didn't, you know, think that there was something wrong with that because the bounce rate was incredible. So in other words, what they did is they went and entered for the iPod, and then boom, they were gone. They never looked at the hotels. They never booked a stay. So what we did is we decided to brand that and give a contest away, similar to what we're doing for you. Rather than giving an iPad away, we're giving away the prize, the destination, you know, a fantastic getaway. You certainly was first with staff about the success of the shoulder season campaign and what we did. And just like with Wine Month, I mean, we had reportable statistics of what we did and what was achieved through that promotion. So a lot of it will be trackable now that we're actually doing some advertising. As far as the big overall picture, I don't think there's anything wrong with asking, you know, us for a 24-month more measurable result of what we would hope to do in 2 years.
Well, thank you. That sounds like we are on the same page when it comes to that. And one question I had was, you had mentioned about the 1,000 referrals that you had given to the local hoteliers. Was there any response back as to what kind of increase was for them, business increase? Was there any much business come out of that? Did you get any feedback from the hoteliers on that?
Not yet. That's not something that we have directly engaged them for. However, though what will really be telling is how your quarterly TOT numbers stack up.
Very good. Thank you. Any other council questions? Okay. I will. I just want to make sure you guys are all done first. Okay. Now we will open up to the public comment. Anyone would like to speak on this subject? You may approach the podium. I was hoping you would.
Good evening, Council. I'm Amr Sohi from the Holiday Inn Express and Suites, and the only thing that I wanted to say was thank you very much for putting in the effort to put the money into this marketing effort. We've seen some change, and I want to applaud you, Councilperson Moreno, for I agree with the measurability and accountability thing, and I know that it's very difficult in the beginning, especially when, like you said, when it started out, there was really little marketing effort and you had really no base to start from. But I would also like to see the 24-month compromise and you know, whether it's a goal that is attained or whether it's something that is possible, you know, I would just like to see, you know, some information on that. But I am glad to see that the City of Atascadero is putting efforts into marketing and have seen a little bit of return. I did want to question about the 1,000 rooms as well, because I wasn't sure how that's measured or how, you know, it would be possible for us to be aware of that so we could thank you and we could follow up on that. I'm not sure how, you know, how that is followed, or if it's possible to, you know, see a direct correlation. But mainly, that's all I want to say is I do see the funds being used for, you know, good efforts, and I'd like to see it continue. Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Oh, yeah, oh, yes, please answer if you have
stats to staff, and we can provide those for council too. And it shows you, excuse me, top referral sites, you know, where people are coming to the website, and we monitor that every month.
Thank you very much. Did that answer your question, Armour? Excellent. Anyone else would like to speak on this subject? Seeing no one else approach, I'm going to close public comment, bring it back to the council. And are there any other questions or no other questions? This is a receive and file, I understand. So we will receive and file it. And that is done. We will call Mayor O'Malley back in. So there's a time delay. So if he's hearing us, it'll be a 30-second delay. So be patient.
Well, I believe next thing on the agenda is council announcements and reports, followed by committee reports. So council announcements is a chance to talk about anything that's not a committee report that you'd like to share. I'll just go from my left to my right. I see Councilman Fonzie.
Yes, it was touched upon this permit that we need from the Department of Fish and Wildlife for the lake. And I guess our permit actually isn't submitted currently. Is that correct? Where are we at on this?
Yeah, we have not actually submitted it. We're in the process of putting that information together.
Okay, very good. If we have a timeline for that, I do have some contacts that I would like to pursue on the political end that Mayor O'Malley mentioned, but I think they are out there and ready and willing to help us if we can expedite. But I think time is of the essence on this because it may rain, which we would love, but we can't really dredge the lake if we have it full of water.
Sure. Yes, timeline, probably by the middle of next week, we would have everything together.
Okay, very good. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other council members? Then we'll move on to committee reports. And I think I will defer on most, though I did want to mention we are continuing to work with the Regional Transportation Authority and San Luis Council Governments on our transit system and combining it. If you recall, we heard there would be substantial savings by working with hearing more complaints about routes are not working for our constituents. So I think there's some work to do there, and I think when appropriate, I know staff will bring this back to us, but I have to say I'm a little disappointed to date, so we'll just see how that unveils. And I think I'll defer on the other committee reports till our next meeting. And I'll move on to Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant.
Just a quick plug that Council Member Moreno, myself, and City Clerk Marsha Torgerson, City Manager Rochelle Rickard, and Fire Chief Kurt Stone will all be attending the upcoming League of California Cities annual conference in Sacramento on the September 18th through 20th. So we will report back on what occurs there and more to come. Thank you.
Thank you. Council Member Fonzie.
Only thing I have to report is we had an air pollution control district meeting this week ago Thursday. As usual, the meeting was contentious. We dealt with the dust rule for the Oceano Dunes, which will be coming back to us. I believe that board is beginning to get under control, and we will see some progress in the right direction, hopefully.
Thank you. Councilmember Kelly?
No report.
Councilmember Moreno?
Just briefly, just with regards to finance, I spoke to a local group last month about the city finances and the budget, handed out that famous B11 page. I didn't go line by line, but I said, you know, you ask me any questions about this, we'll get answers, but I want the people to know where our money is being spent and that the city's fiscally responsible, and so I'm hoping to do more of that in the future. So any groups that would like to hear about the finances, really exciting topic, I know, for people like me and Rochelle and Bob and, you know, some of us, but not everyone. But I would like to do more of that if anyone wants to hear about it.
Thank you. Seeing other council reports, any other staff additions? Then this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.